Is the are we still recording by any means?
Oh yeah.
Okay. You didn't are you Alfred Hitchcocking us, you fucker? Is this what you're doing? Like I got enough, I'm just gonna let this thing run.
Right, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Keep looking through the cupboards, Karen.
For more bits.
Hi everyone, welcome to Sneaky Dragon. My name is David Dedrick.
Don't forget to introduce Vicky.
The thing is that you introduce yourself, then I, as the host, introduce our guest.
Hi, I'm Ian Boothby.
And I'd like
Don't forget to introduce Vicky.
Okay, I will. Actually, before I introduce Vicky, I wanted to say one thing before we go on, which is that
do you have a prepared statement?
I am announcing something. I'm announcing my candidacy for President of the United States for the Republican Party, because I feel like that is just a train wreck that I can jump on before it really comes.
Your slogan is, you could do worse.
you couldn't do worse.
You could this year do worse. Oh, yes.
All right. Sorry, everyone. Actually, I wanted to say we're going to our 250th episode is coming up. We would like questions and or answers and answers. You can send questions and answers, or just anyway. We'd like
this isn't much of a prepared statement.
Send a subject and a verb and a noun.
Yes,
and we'll put them in some sort of order.
We'll throw an adverb anyway, in there for you.
Anyway, we are accepting your submissions.
No expletives, please.
If you would like an interesting, you haven't even introduced yet.
Sorry,
you're breaking all protocol. This is ridiculous.
I have blah blah blah.
Jeez. Welcome to class. I feel like I'm back in school in grade 3. What were they talking about? Oh, yes.
You're talking about the 80s movie Class, where they have sex in an elevator.
Questions. Our question show is coming up. We would like questions. And here's the thing. If there's things that you would like us to talk about that we have never talked about, or you would like us to talk about things more that you'd like us talking about, and you wish, you're like, why didn't they say more about Dragon Quest? Or whatever. I don't think we talked. I don't even know what that is. I just made it up a word.
The video game?
Is it a video game?
I think it might be a board game.
If only they talk more about Galaga. Why don't they say something about Battle Planets? Anyway.
Battle of the Planets are you talking about?
Maybe.
The cartoon?
I'm not using prepositions anymore. if those are the sort of things you'd like us to talk about, though, you can ask us.
We will
throw down some heavy opinions or some information. And it'll be fun.
Dropping info.
And so there you go. We'll talk about it a little bit more at the end of the show. What I want to do now.
By the way, there will also give you ways to contact us.
Yeah, at the end of the show. What I want to talk about now is that we are very fortunate today.
Don't forget to introduce Vicky.
To have friend of the show, Vicky Van, is back again. And what I want to do this time, which is going to be a little different. And so, just so you know, Vicky is a great person that's related to Ian in some vague way. I'm not really sure how.
Sure.
And she knows lots about movies. We had her on a while ago, and she wanted to talk about movies, and we talked about everything but.
We talked about some movies. We talked about racing movies.
Oh, okay. Let's not talk about movies then. Okay. Talk about everything else. But Vicky Van is here with us today. So
hi, Vicky. Glad to be back.
Thanks for coming back.
Go to Vicky's YouTube page and look at some of her videos. They're also funny.
Yes.
Some of them I'm in.
Yes. Ian's in a lot of them. I like working with Ian.
That's how we're related.
That's how you're related.
We're related by YouTube.
By common interests.
Yeah. We're internet and laws.
Yeah. Sure.
So let's just start off with movies. Hmm. What's the latest movie you've seen that you would recommend that people should see?
Let's see.
Should Vicky start?
Well, looks like Dave's got something to say.
Dave, go ahead. That great movie.
If I can jump in, I saw again, I watched Love and Friendship, the Whit Stillman adaptation of Jane Austen's Lady Susan, which has crazily made its way up into my wife's top 5 films.
Wow.
So that's how good it is. Someone who, A, doesn't like Whit Stillman films.
Yeah.
B, does not enjoy Jane Austen or Jane Austen adaptations. This movie is now in her top 5 films. And I'm going to have to ask her why, because I'm not actually clear. I mean, I love it a lot, but I'm just wondering what about it really
Are you saying
makes
we should have
it.
Your wife on instead of Vicky right now?
Yeah.
Okay, Vic, thanks for coming. We're going to try and get, do a hard cut here. We're going to get Dave's wife in. And
bring her on the show and find out what the heck's going on with this Whit Stillman thing. Yeah,
I think it's really something I've heard. I'm starting actually to hear a lot of Oscar buzz for that, especially for Kate Beckinsale. I haven't seen
amazing.
It yet.
She is great in it.
I've heard she's amazing.
But I have to say that so many actors are good in it, and even ones that you've never heard of, they just kind of have been brought in. And the thing I like about Whit Stillman films and all his films is that he doesn't put the plot right there in front of you to see. You have to listen and watch the movie. And what's happening is happening around the characters, you know, and so it's not, you know, some of them might be moving and trying to make things happen, but most of them aren't. They're just people living their lives. And there's one or two characters who are, you know, kind of making the action move forward. And that's just like our lives. You know, most of us are just living our lives, and one or two people in our lives are, you know, making things happen. And we maybe jump on the train with them, or it affects us in some way. And it's kind of an interesting approach where you kind of have to, almost like a Robert Altman film, where there's so much of the information is happening behind the characters. You really have to pay attention to the movies, but not in an onerous way, just in a way that, you know, it sort of unfolds through the humor, through the characters, you know, obviously through Kate Beckinsale's, you know, her Machiavellian, you know, character. And it's not in an unfair way. I mean, Jane Austen, just like someone I admire, like Anthony Trollope, recognized the precarious position of women. By the
way, will this count as our dollop of Trollope?
This will be a dollop of Trollope. Okay. Recognized.
Closer than asking for it.
Here it is.
Now.
Recognized the precarious position of women in English culture, women of the gentry, you know, which was, you know, they couldn't really work. They could suggest it, but you were limited. You could be a governess or a teacher. You know, you couldn't become a nurse or go work in a factory or, you know, that was degradation.
They could only what?
They couldn't work. They could only work it. That was really bad.
Once again, we're going to get my wife on the line and no.
Hello, Dave. It's me, your wife. I can't make it, so just keep going with Vicky. It's me, your wife. I love you.
What happened with her voice?
We had two children together.
Well, that must be her.
I like horses.
Who else would know this information?
That in previous episodes.
Who else would know this information? But
bye. I'm the astral projection of your wife. I'm leaving now. Goodbye.
Wow.
Yeah, that was strange. What a mysterious visit. But you know what it means. So that, you know, they were basically, you lived on the kindness of your friends and relatives, you know, and so that's sort of behind the film. I really am
looking forward to seeing that.
Yeah, me too. It's on my list of stuff to watch like this month.
Well, what was nice is that it came to town. It started in a very select cinema that serves booze. And so my youngest daughter couldn't come with us to see the film. And she, A, loves Whit Stillman films. Last Days of Disco is her favorite.
Right.
And she also loves Jane Austen adaptations. So, you know, she was eager to see it and she couldn't. So luckily, it's been popular enough that it has left its select engagement at this cinema and has now moved out to Hicksville, where I live, and it's playing at the local multiplex.
We know the theater you're talking about. And I'm sorry that she did not get to see it there. But by gosh, it's nice to have that theater.
Yeah.
It is. You know, it's a very nice theater, and it's nice there's a place that serves booze. I just wish that we didn't live in this weird puritanical culture that has this sort of crazy idea that as soon as you allow kids into a cinema with alcohol being served, that they're just going to become drunken kids falling all over the floors.
Because they're not allowed.
But. Right. Because as you know, the three of us just came from White Spot.
Yeah.
And as you know, all restaurants are teetotal in Vancouver.
They're not allowed to serve alcohol.
That's right. And that's why you see all the children are running free in the restaurants, because there's no alcohol available, because if they got near it.
Yeah.
Oh, what could happen? Like gremlins that could spill on them. Yeah. They'd multiply, turn evil.
Yes.
Start being
Well, that's true.
Existential. That does happen with depressed kids and alcohol.
So what's something that you've seen recently?
I think I vamped long enough.
No, that's fine.
I went to see Into the Forest, which isn't Into the Woods.
Right. Into the Woods is a very different
calling
movie.
It Into the Woods for like a week. It was pretty good. It gets a little overly symbolic at the end. It's Ellen Page and Rachel Evan Wood.
Okay. This is a kind of a post-apocalyptic survival film.
Disaster movie, maybe you might
want to
call it.
Let's not call it a disaster movie.
Dave said we couldn't talk about disaster movies anymore.
We've been talking about them.
Sorry, Mother.
Kinda, it's more of an apocalypse movie, which I think is different from a disaster movie.
I think you're right.
It's
spelled differently.
Yeah,
is it a futuristic apocalypse movie?
Yeah, it's
so it's not an apocalypse now.
No.
Okay.
Apocalypse soon.
Apocalypse soon.
You know it's in the future because all the TVs and the phones and the computers are on these clear plexiglass things.
Oh yeah,
that's how you say future.
That's how you say future. Everything else is completely
the same.
Could be the same. Mm-hmm. I think it was filmed in like BC. It looks like it's filmed in the Pacific Northwest.
Oh wow.
It's set in some vague Pacific Northwesty place. And basically the power goes out.
That's for the film. That's a disaster.
Yeah, the power goes out. And on the first night, the news breaks and they're like, oh, there's a new mysterious power outage on the West Coast. And then all the lights go out, you know, just when they hear a little tidbit of news. And they start, you know, using their phones as light sources. They can't get internet. They can't get a phone signal. Mm-hmm. They start going through their like flashlights. And the first night, someone goes to the car and grabs like a headlamp you'd use for camping or rock climbing, but leaves one of the doors open. So the battery gets drained. So then
they
can't use the car for a couple of days. And eventually it just goes like, 5 days without power, 1 month without power, and it keeps going and going, and nobody knows what happened. And it's how they're surviving. And it's more of like a, you know, lady story, ladies in the woods dealing with lady things.
Is that right?
A lot like Melancholia. It's like sisters dealing with their shit when the world is ending.
So there's like a glass ceiling in the cabin. They could always break at any point and fall on them.
Yeah, lots of talk about periods and eyeliner pencil and I don't know. No, wow.
They really hit the tough
Copro
issues there.
No, but it was interesting. It was nice to see. I think I saw it either on the day of the Orlando shooting or the day after. So it was like I was at the theater. I was like, oh, I'll go see that new Ellen Page movie and support gay rights.
Okay.
She's not gay in the movie. But it was an interesting movie.
Out of 6.9 stars, what would you give it?
I didn't like the ending. It does get very symbolic at the end. They just and I'm just like, well, that's I get the symbolism, but don't you guys need to eat and like why don't you just do this simple thing instead of doing that symbolic thing? But, you know, feelings. That had to be addressed, people's feelings and stuff.
It sounds like a genuinely interesting idea of, like, the power goes out and you haven't got a car.
Yeah.
What do you do?
You live in the middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere. What do you do?
Yeah.
You know, and, yeah, you don't know the cause of it and, yeah, things. Ugh,
yeah.
Ugh, creepy.
Yeah, and a lot of just emotional, like, dealing with each other.
Are they sisters? Are they
sisters?
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a different dynamic than the girlfriends or friends.
Yeah. It's nice that she's not just doing movies where she holds Hugh Jackman's head and goes, go into the past. he's not liking it. He's not enjoying the past. I think things are going okay for him.
Yeah.
Sorry to bring that movie. I'm doing a Weird Al karaoke thing tomorrow.
Okay.
And I've decided to sing a song. Well, the idea behind Weird Al karaoke is you sing parody songs that you make up yourself.
Yep.
So to Let It Be, I am doing a song called Jubilee, based on the character from the X-Men films, many X-Men films, and her problems with continuity. And so she is in that film. So I've been like looking up all the histories.
Well, Jubilee, so she can only appear every 4 years, right?
Yes.
And then she has to redistribute wealth.
Go on.
Why do you say that?
And she's got some cherries.
Oh, is that she's a cherries Jubilee?
Yes.
I was thinking more of the Jubilee year from the Old Testament.
Very nice. All right, so we're on Bible talk now. No, in why I was bringing it up is because in the new X-Men Apocalypse movie, Jubilee's there. She's kind of a character who looks like she's going to have lines.
It's every 25 years.
But she doesn't have lines. But she looks like she's going to have lines.
Was she like in the background in the first
movie? Oh, this is the whole damn point. It's like pretty much every one of them she's been in. But like this one takes place in the 1980s. And all of a sudden she's still there. And I'm like, wait, you were in the one. And so I've been looking up the X-Men history. And like, okay, the first film was supposed to take place in 2003. And she's there. Okay. And then it's like, well, maybe that was just a mistake. Because, you know, there's another actress playing Kitty Pryde and whatever. The next film, which happens like in the same year, she's definitely in that one. And yet somehow she's also in the 1980s. Mm. So either she's an immortal or some business is going on. So I based this song that I'm doing on the lack of continuity and problems I have. Though because the last film where Ellen Page, why I brought it up, grabs Wolverine's head, sends him into the past somehow, because that's her power. What? Rearranges all of history. That's her power.
Second to last film. Last film, she wasn't even there, right?
Well, she wasn't in. Oh, okay. Yeah. If you're counting the one that's presently in theaters.
Is she Kitty Pryde? Okay.
She is Kitty Pryde.
Okay. So who's Jubilee?
Jubilee is an Asian mutant.
Yeah.
Who dresses.
Okay, she's in the latest movie.
She is in basically all of them. Yeah. All okay, of okay, them. Okay, yeah. Okay. In fact, she is in the last one too, in a flashback scene. She's in the whole, she's not even just in those. She's even in Generation X, the TV spinoff.
Oh.
She's in a lot of this shit.
Okay.
But it makes no sense that she is a student in the 80s when she is a student in the, in 2003, where Cyclops and Jean are teachers, and yet she seems to go to school with Cyclops and Jean. The excuse could be time is all fucketed up, but it still doesn't make sense why, you know, she would, her age would be, incorrect.
Yeah.
Yes. So I've written, anyway, I've written a song.
Okay.
To Let It Be, called Jubilee. And,
if, and you're going to do it for, you're going
to
do it for us.
And
now.
If it was, I actually could, but I'm not going to. maybe, you know, we have in the past when the songs have become popular, made videos, Vicky and me. So maybe we'll make one of those.
Let's not cut into my, view count. Okay. that's where I make my big books.
Yeah. So this one would be, we'd have to like take some clips from the film. We'll see what's what. But maybe that, maybe we'll, put it on the show in some capacity in the future. We'll see.
Yeah. Or we'll link to it. Get our view counts up.
All right. So you didn't tell us what a movie, though, that you...
Yeah, I'm going to right now.
Oh. Yeah.
By the way...
I know what? I'm tired of this topic. Let's move on.
I think I did bring up X-Men Apocalypse just then, which is a movie that's in theaters now.
That's right.
Yes, I think I did. But here's the thing. On the TV last night... we watched The Night Before, which is a Seth Rogen movie.
Yes.
As you say,
so it's involves kind of drug smoking.
There is some drugs. There's some drugging that he does. And it's also Johnny Handsome from Third Rock from the Sun, who everyone likes.
Joseph Gordon-Levitt.
That's right. And the fellow who plays the Falcon in the Marvel movies. Pull that one. Yeah.
Can you do it? We just watched Civil War.
Yeah. We don't know it, though. Anyway.
We're racist.
It is
horrible, horrible people.
I watched the film. No. Did not have high expectations.
Sorry.
They basically seem to have done everything from every Christmas movie.
Yeah.
But it's like genuinely
got... Does he want a BB gun?
No, they don't have that. But my God, they do a Hans Gruber bit. They do it in a really good way.
I've only seen the trailer.
Yeah, it's way better than the trailer.
And it made it kind of look like Harold and Kumar's Christmas.
Yeah, it's got that kind of creativity, except it's more grounded and more dealing with, you know, my wife's going to have a baby and I'm feeling nervous about it. I'm dealing with this issue. I'm dealing with this issue. All this kind of stuff. But watching it, just the cleverness of it just made me go, it's interesting because we've talked about Judd Apatow on the show before. And how
we have an entire episode dissecting This Is 40.
Right. And Judd Apatow...
And by dissecting it, I mean tearing it a new asshole.
Right. Judd Apatow, you know, was roommates with Adam Sandler and was and started off Seth Rogen. And I look at the two of them as kind of coming out of the Apatow kind of...
Factory.
Sure. And you look at, like, what Adam Sandler has done, and his stuff just seems to get dumber and dumber and pixels and bullshit. And Seth Rogen seems to, for the... topics that he's covering, always does something fucking clever and interesting and visually interesting in these movies.
Well, he's directing is he directing?
Yeah, he's directed at least one episode of Preacher.
Have you guys seen Preacher? Is
yeah.
Very good.
I like it. One. Yeah, the only people that don't seem to like it are people from Perth, Australia. Two people I know from Perth, Australia
have said
ugh. But that's because they're big fans of the Preacher comic, and it's not like that. But I don't think you can make it like that.
I have never read the Preacher comic, so I would be coming at it fresh.
But yeah, I was very impressed with the...
Not frozen.
With the direction of like Seth and I think it's Evan Goldberg.
Yes.
They directed an episode and did a really good job with some action scenes. And there's a great scene where a chainsaw gets loose on the floor and it's just going towards a guy who's unconscious. And you're like, ooh, it's genuinely creepy. And good fight scenes.
Has a little Ash versus Evil Dead.
It really has that kind of thing. But actually... like a little bit better, frankly, because they ground it a little more.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're pulling off some stuff there. And it just made me kind of go, interesting how these two guys have gone these two kind of completely different ways.
Yeah.
And I'm really interested to see what Seth Rogen keeps doing. And Adam Sandler, I think we don't need you anymore because we've got Seth Rogen.
Was he ever not Netflix dumb, though? Now. Can we look back at Adam Sandler films and go, that was a smart movie? Billy Madison, whoa, that was so intelligent. I mean, the way he dissected, you know, high school or elementary school politics and just looked at the way, you know, the dynamics of the classroom and how, you know.
Well, I've never seen, have you seen Punch Drunk Love?
I have. Yeah. I saw it.
That was Paul Thomas Anderson.
Yeah, it seemed like he was trying to do that as well. Like, it seemed like he was trying to, I'm not just this
have
guy.
Have his cake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But He didn't really do anything along that line again.
Again,
really.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought Wedding Singer was fairly clever. It seemed to seemed to be a surreal kind of situation. Like, I think that's one of his better ones. That, you know, it worked. It made fun of the era. It wasn't just, you know, I'm the dumb guy who's aggressive and violent, and that's enough.
Yeah, the characters had some vulnerability. Yeah, Wedding Singer was pretty good. Wedding Crashers? Wedding Singers.
Wedding Singer. Yeah.
Wedding Singer.
Brian Singer, X-Men 2, X-Men Apocalypse, Superman Returns,
Apocalypse Now,
Usual Suspects. Who wins that round?
You're wrong there. Apocalypse Now. Now You See Me, Now You Don't. 2.
How to Train Your Dragon.
Tutu. Tutu's worn by ballet dancer. Black Swan. Okay.
Swanee River. River Phoenix.
River runs through it.
By the time I get to River Phoenix.
And hi, everybody. This is why we don't do two shows in one night normally. But, you know, I can't see a lot of people doing kind of – he seems to be trying to push comedy every time he does it. He does something a little bit different, a little bit
interesting. Seth Rogen, you mean.
Seth Rogen, yeah, and Evan Goldberg.
I guess. I mean
– something like Superbad, you know?
I'm not a super fan of Superbad. I think there's good parts in it, but I really hate the cops sequences in it.
Okay.
Which totally wreck whatever kind of reality they're trying to build in the film. I really like The Interview. I thought that was a very, very well done film. Mostly because it makes it pretty clear that it's a fantasy, and so it works in that kind of fantastical way. But yeah, I think that his comedy films do have an element of risk to the characters. You know, whether it's emotional or physical, like, so something bad could come out of what the situation they're creating. Even a movie that is as dumb as Neighbors, there's a feeling like, oh, this could go terrible. Like, you know, they have a baby. Like, what are they doing? What are they doing? You know, so it just feels like so many dumb things that they're doing in the film could have a real impact.
And it's not as preachy as the Judd Apatows, which all seem to be have an outrageous character at the beginning who then, you know, by the end has the most, you know, standard American traditional relationship. You know, it's like knocked up. Oh, he's this crazy guy. Well, no, you know what? You should just have a baby. You should get married. Settle down. Yeah. Have a baby. You know, it's just like Amy Poehler. She's a crazy one. Okay, settle down, everyone. Just a traditional, sensible relationship.
What's Amy Poehler?
And Trainwreck. Or Amy Schumer. Schumer and Trainwreck. Yeah, settle down. Everyone settle down. And it seems like almost all of the Judd Apatow movies are really almost...
He directed Trainwreck, right?
Oh, that is a good question.
I think so. I know he produced it.
At the very least, he produced it. Yeah. But a Judd Apatow movie now seems to have a very preachy ending. It's almost like it was put together by some Christian production company, it feels like.
Yeah, it's like a comically fucked up person whose only salvation is getting back to heteronormativity. Like,
yes.
Don't stop being so edgy, stop being so drunk, stop being so fucked up, and get your shit together and have a kid.
Yeah, but occasionally go out and get high.
Oh, yeah.
What did you call it?
And really be an asshole. Cool. And
what did you call it?
Heteronormativity?
Wow. Never mind the buzzwords.
I went to college.
I was just going to I just want to confess one thing, guys.
Okay.
I have never really seen very many, I guess I have kind of, I've seen 40-Year-Old Virgin, did not like it.
Oh,
I like
that one a lot.
Tried to watch Knocked Up, could not finish it.
Okay.
Hated This Is 40 with a vengeance.
Yeah, agreed.
And did he do Superbad? I don't think he directed Superbad,
did
he?
No, that's Seth Rogen.
Seth Rogen and Evan Goldberg. Yeah. And then...
Rogen does way more interesting women. Like, Apatow movies are usually the eye-rolling girlfriend who wants you to get a job and wants you to get your shit together.
I know her. Am I right, fellas? High five!
But at least in Seth Rogen movies, they're usually interesting characters. Like, what's the frat boy one?
Neighbors.
And Neighbors, too.
The wife is actually quite interesting. Like, she's a bit of a stoner. She can hold her own with, like, all the fart jokes and shit. But she just is not the whining wife. She's like also kind of lamenting losing her 20s and her party days.
Sure.
And that kind of stuff.
Yeah. The people in The Night Before, it's mostly, it is a guy's three guys bonding, whatever. Yeah. But they do have some really interesting comedic side characters. They have one of the women from Broad City, and she is like every – she plays basically every villain from every Christmas movie. So she's like a – she does some Grinch shit. She does some Home Alone shit, and she does some Hans Gruber shit. Yeah, and she knows she's doing this stuff and like goes, here's the Hans Gruber. Ready for it? Here it goes. And is doing the thing. It's like, nice. And I also like that all the women in there look like women. They don't look like – you know, Megan Fox just walked in, and it's like, well, okay, you've lost me on this. You've got to really backpedal this one for me so I understand it. But just like, no, just look like people, and the things they're afraid of are legit things to be afraid of, and here we go. Yeah. And it's also like the other parallel to Seth Rogen is like Kevin Smith, because he always loved Kevin Smith movies.
Okay.
And he did
There's
one.
No accounting for taste.
Yeah. And then he did one, and it wasn't very good. It was the Zach and, sorry, something do a porno.
Mary, oh, okay. Zach and Mary porno.
Someone do porno is porn. What it was called.
Zach Mary porn.
Yeah. And he's.
Thanks.
He's, porn in a coffee shop.
He's trying his best in it.
Thanks for dropping the prepositions.
But it's got some scenes in it that you just go, well, this is just stupid. Even in the context of what you've laid down here, these people would not do this because that's just common sense stupid.
Yeah.
Once this again, have not seen that.
Yeah, they have. Oh, let me give you just one.
I just don't remember much.
Yeah, here's one basic scene that you just go, really? Which is like, there's a, you know, it's the night before they do their porno. So they're going to shoot a porno and they decide, you know what? Why don't we all just, why don't we all relax and have some sex now? It's like, no. There are reasons, technical, simple reasons, why you would not do that before you do this, you fucking idiots. But, you know, you need to move the movie along, whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
But I get the feeling like after he did that, he went, okay, got it. Nope. And then he just kept getting better. And Kevin Smith then made a movie about a guy turning into a walrus. And like, then there we go.
What about, I'm looking forward to his new film, Yoga Hosers.
Are you looking forward to that one?
No.
Okay.
Part of his True North trilogy, everyone, horror trilogy.
He's not Canadian, right?
No, but he went to film school here in Vancouver.
Oh, okay.
He's the most successful person to come out of Vancouver film school, and he quit. Yeah. And then if he's the guy that you go, you know, as a filmmaker, check this style out.
Well, if you were in the 90s, if you were about that age in the 90s, which I think Seth Rogen and I are about the same age, I also was really big into Kevin Smith when I was like 19 because he was someone who was making movies outside of the Hollywood system, making it feel like, oh, you could actually do this.
Could actually rack up your credit card and make a movie.
Yeah. There was that whole kind of, I made this for the price of a used car, and now I'm on Entertainment Tonight with, you know, what's his face?
Yeah, and he was inspired by Slacker. What's his
face? You know, the, not Zamfir, with the other guy. Plays
John
piano.
Tesh.
John Tesh.
John Tesh, Zamfir. That's right.
Zamfir.
Mary Hart and Yo-Yo Ma.
Tonight on Entertainment.
But yeah, he was very inspired by Slacker, and he went, oh, you could just do this as a movie. And then he did Clerks. And I think a lot of people saw that and went, oh, you can just do that as a movie. Okay.
Too many people thought that.
Yeah.
That's true. It's the Quentin Tarantino thing of like, I can do that. Can you? maybe you can, but there you are. And then he went on, did Mallrats, and you kind of went, yeah, it's a thing.
But like people like me were rooting for him because you're like, yeah, because I want to be that person too.
But it felt like his growth just stopped and he had ran out of things to say.
Yeah.
And he feels of the kind of Judd Apatow kind of thing too of, you know, isn't it funny just if people get high? Yeah. I guess so. And it's a drag with the Judd Apatow because, you know, Apatow did Freaks and Geeks, which I think is one of the best things ever.
Oh, yeah.
With all these amazing people in it. And it's like, what happened to that guy? Where'd that guy go?
For all these movies, like even with the Adam Sandler movies, you never know what's going on behind the scenes. And like you hear these horror stories about people being ground down by producers and, you know, all the stress and the money that goes into making a film that you have got to get okays from like 100 different people who can just step in and take over if you don't listen to them.
That's true.
Like
you
never know what makes that movie shitty or, you know, but when maybe somebody just gives up. Like there's a certain point where I think like we were talking about, you know, the Civil War versus Batman v Superman. Not on this show, like privately.
That's our private podcast called I Just Have a Tape Deck Running in the Car. Yeah.
No, we're just talking about how, like, in Civil War, it has an internal logic, whereas Batman v Superman has so many just gaping, like, what? Why did you even say that line? Like, mm-hmm. that doesn't make sense within the movie, let alone...
I haven't seen the
V1. You know, if you've read every single Batman and Superman comic, which is a pet peeve, like, for most comic book movies for me, it's like, if I don't care if it's a flat car callback to something that mm-hmm. character did 30 years ago in the comic book, it has to make sense within that movie.
Yeah. Why is Superman an ant?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
but like it just feels
that was
like
an Ant-Man. I think you're thinking about
Batman v Superman and movies sorry. Like that. You know, they you put that much money and effort. It takes years to make a movie, even like a crappy little like mm-hmm. independent movie or something on like a very simple schedule. Like at some point, someone has to go to the script and go, "Okay, I've gone."
Well, isn't
through
that
all these
the most important part?
Often they movies are started without finishing a script.
Yeah, and I think that's like, obviously a mistake.
Yeah, it's
I think
a huge
we could
mistake.
But there's an example. Okay, when you're talking Batman v Superman, here's like the one scene that just
but it's
makes
just obvious.
Go ahead,
nobody. There's a point where somebody either didn't care to say, "Hey guys, this doesn't make sense." Wasn't given the time to say it.
Yeah.
Or just gave up and just said, "Okay, whatever. We've got the 8,000 bits of this machinery going and the cogs are moving and the explosives are going and the camera's running and I'm not going to say, oh, just a second.
Yeah.
This character wouldn't do that."
And one example I'd like to say to yeah. add to your point is there's a scene in the trailer. So if you've seen the trailer, it's where Wonder Woman shows up and Batman turns and Superman turns to Batman and goes, "Is she with you?" And Batman goes, "I thought she was with you." It's a funny, charming line. Sure. We all enjoy it.
Good in
but
the
then
trailer.
And it's good in the trailer. It's also in the movie.
Yeah.
But before then in the movie, Batman emails Wonder Woman to tell him where he's going to be. And that's why she's there. So is she with you? Yes, she is. I emailed her. And that's why she's here is the correct response. Not, I thought it was with you. Hey, Batman, did you not see the earlier fucking part where you contacted her?
Doesn't that seem doesn't
it's like Commissioner yeah. Gordon like standing on the roof with the bat signal. Batman shows up and then Commissioner Gordon would turn and go, "What the fuck are you doing here?"
Okay, let me just back up here because I think the weirdest the weirdest thing of what you said is that he emails Wonder Woman. Like that seems like so weird.
I'm
like,
sorry, bat mails.
Yeah. Like shouldn't it be like Commissioner Gordon sends out the bat email, like says it doesn't do the light against the clouds.
No, it's
which doesn't work on a clear night, by the way. You can't yeah. call Batman
yeah.
if it's a sunny day.
Right, unless you've got the power to make clouds. And what you don't know is there's another hero called Cloudy who's yeah. like, "I'll help Mr. Gordon." Okay, Cloudy, we need you to go up there and let the signal project on you. You
sure.
got it. Which also means Batman has to constantly be looking out of the window of the mansion.
Yeah.
Like, you know that Batman...
Or
that's what Alfred's
Arthur?
Doing.
Or Alfred, sorry.
Right.
I was going to call
right.
him Arthur.
But here's the other thing. It's like, so you're projecting it in the sky. Mm-hmm. You know he's in a cave, right? How the fuck is he going to see the thing in the sky, you idiot?
Yeah.
Smarten up.
He's on Twitter and people are like, "Guys, look at the clouds."
You're trending.
And Cloudy's friend Windy.
She was the worst super friend. I want to just throw that out there. For all that everyone was like Aquaman bashing,
yeah.
there was Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. Marvin, at least, could fly.
Yeah.
Wonder Dog was a dog that could sort of talk.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff. Wendy... just around. That's it.
That's Super Friends, you said?
Yeah. The original Super Friends had Wendy, Marvin, and Wonder Dog. It's before the Wonder Twins showed up. You think the Wonder Twins. Okay. Oh, is that your dog? Wonder Dog? Wonder Twins? Nope. Who's your pet? Gleep. Gleep, not Wonder Monkey. Because you've got a Gleep. Monkey and we had a Wonder Dog.
Yeah.
For fuck's sake. Also, by the way, Wonder Dog. So that's not Wonder Woman's dog. Nope. And the Wonder Twins aren't related to Wonder Woman. Nope. Yeah. Because if we had the super twins here, I think they'd be connected with fucking Superman, wouldn't
yeah.
they?
Didn't their powers seem kind of odd to you even as a kid?
Who are we talking about?
The Wonder Twins.
We can discuss this if you'd like. Please go on with your supposition before
well, just,
we begin.
You know, they go form of.
Yeah.
Yes.
And one takes the form of a bucket of water.
Right.
Like, that doesn't make sense. You can be water mm-hmm. or you can be a bucket. You can't be a bucket of water.
That's a good point, unless it's an ice bucket. Go ahead.
Do they ever become a gun?
An ice gun?
Ice gun. Oh, okay.
This seems odd. And then they went across this.
Like I watched these, but I was like,
they
four.
Carry.
So I
carries a bucket of water somewhere. That just seemed like
images.
I don't know. It felt like they weren't trying very hard.
Could I tell you my Wonder Twins pitch?
You can tell me your Wonder Twins pitch.
Guys, this
elevator
is my,
pitch. Go.
This is my Wonder Twins elevator pitch.
Hopefully it's on an escalator pitch.
Okay, they come from another planet, mm-hmm. these guys. And so what you find out is, because it's like weird that you got a monkey named Gleek. Here's the situation. The monkey named Gleek used to have his own twin, because everyone on this planet has a twin. But if your twin dies while you're in that form, you're stuck in that form forever. Uh-huh. So the other twin got killed, and now mm-hmm. this one is a monkey, and just becoming more monkey-like over time. And they so they have to take care of this monkey.
Okay.
And you think it's his pet, but it's actually got a tragic backstory.
It's dark.
I just like this. This is one of those great things about modern films, where every character that you has to have some sort of terrible tragic back. You thought she was a bad witch, hey? Well, you don't know how much abuse she faced before she became a bad witch. No, what do you think about her? You feel pretty bad, right? You didn't like that evil witch, but now you feel bad.
You thought Hitler was bad.
Yeah. Let's take a look. Where do you find out that people made fun of his paintings? Finding Dory was pretty funny when she had amnesia all the time and couldn't remember stuff. That's pretty funny. Oh, it's tragic. Oh, it's terrible that she can't remember. What a character flaw.
Wait till we hear Dave's backstory. Mm. Actually, that was last week. We did a lot of backstory last week.
We went dark.
Yeah, we went dark and went home.
Batman Begins dark.
We did both. Yeah, Batman. Here's my main problem with like something like a Batman versus Superman. If you make being a superhero a pain in the ass, who cares then?
Yeah, he's rich as fuck. Like,
yeah, it's wish-fulfillment characters. Wish-fulfillment characters that you're trying to make constantly upset. Like, but you got to at least show, it's fun to fly, right, yeah. Superman? That's a good time. Like, you like driving the Batmobile, right, Batman? It's fun.
Pretty
and
cool.
Then something tragic happens. But not, ugh, you're bummed out from the start, both of you.
Yeah, why would you even get out of bed?
Yeah, your bat bed.
You're a bat bed.
Also, there's a bit of a problem I have in the movie in that he's sleeping with a lady. And
who is, sorry?
Batman.
Oh, Batman is.
Right.
Okay.
And he's sleeping with a lady, and you're like, oh, because I always thought like the Batman Playboy thing was, oh, this is your persona you're putting on. Like Clark mm-hmm. Kent pretends to be a nerd.
Yeah.
And you're this.
Well,
like,
in the Christopher
Reeves?
No.
Christopher
Nolan?
Christian
Nolan.
Bale?
Nolan. Christian Bale, Nolan, Christopher Nolan movies.
Yeah.
it's an act. He like hires models and they
okay.
frolic in the, but they never.
Yeah, he never goes home with them.
Yeah.
And this time it's like Ben Affleck.
He's just a really healthy, sexless creep.
Yeah.
Well, he's working it out in other ways.
Okay.
Also, I think.
PXN.
Mm-hmm.
I think.
Likes latex.
Yes, that's right, PXN. The other angle is like, he is scarred as hell. So if he like took off his clothes in front of someone, they'd just be, what's with all the bullet holes?
Yeah.
Are you Batman?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm Batman. Oh, okay. I'm going to go tell everyone you're Batman. No, don't. Take millions of dollars and don't tell them. All right. That's the story.
Yeah. It's pretty gross. Pretty gross.
So wait. Oh, that is not fun to... do you think that they're... Okay.
Spider-Man
so we have,
has fun when he's Spider-Man.
We have Superman v. Batman.
Right.
Has there ever been like a truly successful Superman film?
No. There's been a truly successful Superman.
Who is?
Who is Christopher Reeve.
I would agree with you. I think he's the best Superman. Just in terms of how... I don't think he was like a great actor, but he seemed to be made for that part. And he played both parts so well. Clark Kent really yep. well. And Superman. And he just had this great kind of self-effacing quality to him. And also super handsome, right? Like, so this kind of great good looks.
Mm-hmm.
And then, but also this kind of human self-effacing.
He could do a good schlub. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I would agree with you. And I think personally, my favorite of Superman films, sorry, I almost said Batman. Favorite of Superman films.
Yeah, don't do it again.
Is the first one. Even though I think the ending is terribly flawed with the flying backwards
right,
part
yeah.
of it, which is dumb because it can't happen.
And I think you're liking it because you're forgetting a lot of it, but go ahead.
No, I'm not forgetting stuff. There's things that I think are weak about it. I think Gene Hackman's character is kind of weak.
Yeah, any kind of sidekick character that walks along while tuba music plays, I'm against.
But that's the same thing. But here's the thing. If you're going to say that the second one is better, it has the same stuff going on. It has the tuba music playing.
Yeah.
It has the Gene Hackman over the top, Lex
but it's
Luthor.
Got,
it's got, but,
it's got villains, though, that
it's got
seem
villains
like a
that
legit...
Are,
like, who's Superman going up against? He's going up against three people with the same powers as mm-hmm. him. Fuck, that
yeah.
sounds hard.
It okay. does sound hard. But then it's got like the kind of dumb stuff where he beats up a guy in a cast.
It's completely dumb stuff.
You know, so that kind of counters it to me. Like I can put up with the dumbness because if we're going to agree that there's no perfect film, mm-hmm. then we have to kind of discount some element of all these movies. And I'm willing to discount more in the first film than I am in the second film, even though I think that Zod is a better villain.
What overall. Do you think, Guest?
Yes, Guest. Throw in.
I think can you, like the side. First Superman movie that came out, like, what, 80, 81?
Think about 80, yeah.
79, I think.
Yeah, it might be 79. Just on, I think it came out at a time when people were really craving just something happy.
Mm-hmm.
Something colorful.
That's what's great about it.
It was like we had the everything from the French Connection to Dog Day Afternoon to like all this Attica and Serpco. And, you know, it was just depressing and post-Nixon and, mm-hmm. you know, everything was just kind of.
Well, there's already Star Wars that kind of took the edge off that.
But. Yeah. I'm not saying it was the groundbreaking happy movie, mm-hmm. but okay. it came along, I guess, you know, in the film industry, they're just getting the technology to make some of those things real. Like
they were just learning blockbuster.
Yes.
They were still learning
and
how
the
to
flying,
make
it. And the flying scenes were
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, they could make the flying scenes work. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the technology, like, and it's weird because we were at Stormcrow and what was playing that sci-fi movie?
Oh, Battle Beyond the Stars, I
yeah.
think?
Yeah. And that was like, that came out. The same year as Star Wars or around then. And same with Logan's Run. They're all kind of around the same time as Star Wars, but mm-hmm. you saw.
Are you familiar with Battle Beyond the Stars?
I'm not.
It's
I'm
got
not.
The actor who played John Boy in The Waltons. It's a remake of Sam and Samurai.
Weirdly, his real name is John Boy. His last name is Boy.
What?
Richard.
What?
Richard
what?
Something, right? Richard.
What? Richard Boy?
Richard Boy,
what?
That's right.
What?
Dick Boy.
What?
As he was called around
all right.
the
Ironically, back in Battle Beyond the Stars, John Boy, Dick Boy, drives around in a spaceship that looks
good
like
night,
a
Dick Boy.
Scrotum with wings on it. Okay. But like the technology, uh-huh. you saw like the visual aesthetic difference between Logan's Run and Star Wars and Battle Beyond the Stars. Mm-hmm. Some people were getting it and some people weren't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Superman, Star Wars, Raiders, they were getting it.
Yeah. To
they
be fair to Logan's learning. Run, it wasn't really like a fantasy science fiction film. It was more of a, you know,
I know.
What do you call it? Hard science fiction or whatever, where it has like some sort of
they
dystopian.
Were using lots of yeah. plexiglass.
And, dystopian. And there's an idea.
Tight suits and bummer ending. Yeah.
Yeah. If but there's an idea behind that? It, right? There's an idea of like, you know, this culture
yeah,
that
totally.
Turns youth into the, you know, into yes. this great important thing. And then, yeah. so that's different than Star Wars or Battle Beyond the
I know,
Stars.
But aesthetically, how they were using the camera, how they're lighting, sets, everything.
A lot of ladies in short dresses. What I'm, yeah. guys, come on, go
disco
boots.
Disco fever in the future.
Sure.
Jenny yeah, Agutter, I think contextually, right? like certain movies are great and last a long time. Like I don't know if you watch Superman now, if you know, there's a lot of flaws to it. And but
yeah,
you
can only look
at
it through
time,
the prism of nostalgia.
Yeah, yeah,
for sure.
But like they're.
But I doubt anyone's looking at Superman Returns and going, sigh, what a movie.
Yeah, you know? There's a lot of movies now. And I don't think it happens. It happens very rarely, I think, that a movie really grasps onto what's happening currently and says something about that, even in an aesthetic, non-obvious mm-hmm. way.
And isn't it time
that
really Superman well. Film said, fuck Lex Luthor. Just fuck off and let's see someone else.
You
like
can
Brainiac
throw him
or...
into the sun.
Yeah. That son goes, I don't want that.
Yeah.
But the Marvel films, I think, do that to a degree. Like,
yeah.
I think a lot of the Captain America films
oh,
as
yeah.
well are like, you know, what's freedom, you know, liberty versus safety. You know, that's a thing, you know, they hammer it home like crazy.
Yeah.
But, you know, the idea, should we, you know, protect.
There's a philosophical bent.
There is. There's
everything.
An interesting discussion yeah. we had, even the Civil War one.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like, oh, there's interesting things you could discuss afterwards.
Yeah.
But just getting back to Superman briefly, I think the problem with Superman was they were still trying to do they didn't have the confidence to do.
Oh, if only you were right.
Yeah. They didn't have the confidence to do anything that wasn't like the Batman type thing, right? So they, well, basically Lex Luthor and Ned Beatty and
yeah.
the nice lady, Mrs. Tenenbaum.
Valerie Perrine.
Lock and Locker Rockers. They would be fine if you took those three and put them into the old Batman TV show.
Yeah.
No problem.
Yeah.
You know,
that's an even game.
Egghead could be like,
but you know,
in
there's
there
there's comedy elements to Clark Kent though too.
Oh, absolutely, and that's totally fine. I don't mind that, but I think where it kind of loses me is there's cynical stuff throughout. Like when Clark Kent is running next to the train, a little girl says to the mom, "Look, there's a man running next to the train. What did I tell you about telling lies?" And it's like that. Okay, and then yeah. the scene that you kind of probably one of the scenes you remember the most, Superman rescuing the cat from the tree, gives it to the little girl.
I have no memory of that.
Well. She rescues a cat from a tree, gives it to the little girl, goes
beautiful
inside,
moment.
And she tells her mom, there was a flying man. And then her mom slaps her across the face for lying.
Yeah.
You just hear it.
But like clocks her. Yeah. And it's just like.
You see it or you just hear it?
You just hear it. Okay. But that's the joke because we've got to take the treacle off it. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the confidence to go, let it play out.
Yeah.
Let the moment play out. And they couldn't then because it was the 70s, late 70s. You got to be cynical. Mm-hmm. You got to have everyone sarcastic. Mm-hmm. You got to have, you know, a Lois Lane, asking how many peas and rapist. You got, you know, everything's that.
Yeah.
And it's fine. And then, of course, you got to have the scene with Lois Lane where she's flying. And you remember that scene and go like, what a beautiful scene with the two of them flying. You forget the poem. Where she just breaks into a fucking poem in her head. No, sir. Boo on the poem. I admire the risk, but I say it's a failure.
I like it. Apparently, it was supposed to be a song.
Why am I flying in the sky? Are you with this? You and I? It's like, oh my God, what is this from her high school yearbook? What the shit is this? Why is she poeming? Well,
the problem with the poem is that it was actually supposed to be a song, and those were the lyrics for the song, and song lyrics are terrible.
Okay.
Once you take them away from the song, it's true. But I like it. I like the dumbness of it.
That she's doing a poem.
Yeah,
she just wrote a poem in her head while she's flying.
Yeah, I didn't think of it that way. I thought of it as kind of like her looking back at that moment. We're just kind of hearing her thoughts about it. You know? I don't know. I don't.
And let me ask you this question. So
I wasn't happy with the film, and I saw it in grade 8. And I have to admit, I preferred the promo film before the film started of Joe Jackson singing. Is she really going out with him? Which I'd never heard before, and I was really excited to hear that song. I thought, well, this is really good. I have to check this guy out. But the movie itself, you know, I thought it was okay.
But here's my question is like, so, because it seems like it sets up something and then never does anything with it,
do you feel like you can defend?
Which I shouldn't even talk about. Okay.
Well, just say what you're going to say.
All right, I'm going to say what I'm going to say. Okay. Yeah. All right. So here's the thing. So the whole thing is like, and now my son, I tell you these things. And here's the thing. And one thing, I really got to tell you something.
Oh, I know.
Don't use time travel. Don't. Nope. I'm going to tell you how to do it. But don't do it, no matter what. Whatever you do, I gotta stress this. Don't travel through time. Mm-hmm. Later, he's like flying. Yeah. I'm gonna travel through time. His father's giant head shows up. Don't do this. Don't travel through time. He travels through time, and it all works out fine. The end.
Well,
why, Dad? Yeah. Why shouldn't I travel through time? No consequence. No nothing.
I just want to say it before I even said anything about it. I said that was the ending of the film I didn't like.
And no, but the ending is you don't. But there's a reason not to like it because it's too simple. Because if you can reverse time, then just keep going back, solve all your fucking problems,
and
you've just done the erase button. That's not the big problem. The big problem is when your dad says the one thing. Like if anyone just lays that pipe down, you can never open this box. Don't open the box. Open the box. Hey, it's a pack of gum. I really need some gum. Da 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 da. The end of the movie's playing now. It's like, no, dude.
Yeah.
Or at least the second movie could have been showing you, oh, we did fuck everything up. You know,
like play on. That's how you free the Phantom Zone villains or some shit goes down.
Yeah.
Like, what if you, like, the realistic thing, which we've talked about before in the show, is because you've done that, you've now created a second Superman who's going to land in a second and go, I'm here to rescue Lois. Who are you? Uh-oh, SpaghettiOs. We're in trouble now. And maybe that first Superman has to sacrifice himself and go, I can't live here anymore. So now I can never love you. I'm going to fly into space. So long. It's the only thing I can do. And that's why you never fly back in time. But there's no consequences to the big thing you set up.
Yeah. No.
Boo movie.
I agree. I think it's a weak ending. I don't like it at all. But I feel like both films have problems. And if you feel like you have to defend one, you also have to defend two. So...
I'm not saying two is perfect.
And I always thought two was the better film, but I watched it a while ago and I thought, you know what? This is pretty weak soup here. I don't really. I think maybe I would feel that way about one. I think people are happy with
Zod playing it fairly straight.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the three of them are legitimately.
As straight as you can, dressed as he is.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. But it's just like scary. She's burning shit, killing guys.
Yeah.
You know, is doing all this stuff. But yeah, the ending where he goes and beats up the bully is straight out not a Superman fucking thing to do. Like, Superman doesn't pick a fight with a regular guy.
Mm-hmm.
And if you actually look at the original Richard Donner version,
he
does reverse time again, but still goes back to beat up the guy who has never done anything to him. So Superman just picked a fight with a guy, beat the shit out of him, threw a wad of cash down and went, this'll cover it. Yeah. Fuck y'all. Superman out.
Pulls down his pants, take a super shit on the floor.
That's right. Shits out some kryptonite. It's like, I thought that hurt you. No, it hurts you. Brown kryptonite. Throws it at him.
brown kryptonite.
Then he becomes the villain for the third movie.
Yes. I just, like I say, you can't defend.
There's good bits in all of them, and there's huge flaws in all. Even Superman 3, which is a big piece of shit, has the Superman fighting evil Superman, which is a good scene. Even Superman Returns, which is not a good movie, has him saving the plane, and that actually really is a well done scene as well. So everything's got a little bit of something in it.
Most movies have the one thing that you're like, not that's bad. Pretty good.
Yeah, except Superman 4. That's a terrible start to finish. There's nothing good in that film. Nothing.
This is Richard Pryor?
No, that's the one with Ducky. Quest for Peace. Yeah, it's the one with John Cryer in it.
I'm pretty sure I saw that once when I was like 8.
And I have never seen that film. I've seen people make fun of the film, and that's good enough.
I went to see it with my friend Bruce, and I remember we're sitting in the movie theater. He's like, I'm really looking forward to this. We're sitting down, and then Canon Films comes up, and he goes, fuck me. Like, what? Like, they've never done a good film. This is going to be a nightmare. And then the first scene up, you're like, oh, no. And then they reuse this scene where Superman flies at the camera like 8 times. It's the exact same scene over and over again.
They used scenes from other films, too, didn't they?
They completely did. But then
do that a lot in a lot of movies.
Yeah, this one, though, boy.
There's this scene of somebody driving up a winter road in Jennifer 8 that I've seen in like 10 different things since I saw that movie.
Wow. Have you heard about this thing? And I just
it's in Jennifer 10.
Yeah.
Whoa. I heard about this the other day, which is there's an episode of the Incredible Hulk TV series. And they used all the exterior shots from Duel, the movie Duel.
Okay.
And so the guy in this Hulk thing is dressed just like the characters from the guy in the truck and everything. They're both dressed like the characters from Duel, so they could use and apparently this was something that happened fairly regularly with whatever this studio was.
Oh, interesting.
Just like, we've got a TV series and we own the movies, so let's just shove this in.
If you have the footage, it's yours. Like it.
Yeah, it's.
I remember we've.
It's Universal. That would be Universal.
Disaster movie film festival we're having recently was reading something where they did that.
But displayed films that used reused things.
Well, they used
the recycled film festival
film footage from some movie. I think it was for Emergency or something.
That could very well be.
So a lot of fire engines driving through Los Angeles.
Well, and I know in Airport 79 they used large chunks of footage from Avalanche, a movie called Avalanche.
Maybe should be talking about that.
What? I'm continuing on. I'm going from like airport movies now, and I'm shifting into just disaster movies. Like,
okay.
Meteor and Armageddon and Deep Impact.
Superman Quest for Peace is a bit of a disaster. Yeah. Hey, speaking about Armageddon, did you see a little bit of that? They're playing Ben Affleck's commentary to Armageddon. I thought that was pretty good. There's a little snippet of it online.
I've seen the headline. Mm. I haven't clicked on it yet.
Well, you know, you should have, because then you could have joined in the conversation.
He's probably hilarious.
It actually is very.
He's a funny guy.
He does seem to be a funny guy. I wonder why he's playing such a funless, humorless, creepy Batman.
Doesn't it feel like with Ben Affleck, bless his heart.
Bless his heart.
Doesn't matter what he does, he'll always reset to Ben Affleck for people, and you'll go, no. Like, it's like,
what do you mean?
Well, you know, he won the Academy Award for everything.
For Argo, yeah.
For everything. And it was like, you go win this, and you got all the Academy Awards. Hooray, I've shown you all. Yeah. And then, like, about a heartbeat away from that, he's like, the next movie, fucking Ben Affleck. It's just that. It's just like, it just goes back, and it's like, he never seemed to get any ground, that guy. He just never seems to get, like, and he does so much good stuff. Well, you're like,
I think Ben Affleck, established he's a good director.
Yeah, and a funny guy. And a funny but it's just guy. You never think like, hey, you know who should be in a comedy? Ben Affleck. You'd never think that.
But the problem is so much of his life is lived in the tabloids. Yeah. Unlike Matt Damon, his former partner in crime, who is a legitimate, you know, no one looks at him and thinks of Team America and Matt Damon, you know, no one, that doesn't haunt him the way that Ben Affleck's tabloid history does, you know.
Yeah, well, only one of them has a Oscar for writing and directing. And
true.
That's not
Matt Damon. No. I know, but Matt Damon's still seen as a more legitimate actor than Ben Affleck.
I guess, yeah.
No, it's not
For me, I would say he's got more range as an actor. I think he's got, with the Bourne stuff, he's probably got the same box office pull. But I think it's a case of,
someone knows how to manage his image better than another one. That's all it is. I mean,
and that, like, if somebody offers you, you know, $10 million to do X, and then you're like, well, that can mean I can, like, even if the movie, even if Batman didn't do great.
I don't do drugs even for $10 million.
Even if, like, Batman, Superman didn't blow the records mm-hmm. off everything and blah, yeah. but it made at least $200 million
yeah,
so
yeah.
far.
Yeah, it did okay.
You know, that's a lot of money. Yeah, it's hard to say no
but
to.
It's not,
you probably always wanted to be Batman.
But
like,
it's still accompanied by
once
the...
Once you get there and it's shit, there's nothing you can do about it.
It's still,
by the way, those asking what that sound mm-hmm. is outside, that is a street cleaner.
Yeah.
That is cleaning the streets.
Canada
and
is
so
notoriously clean.
All the gum is now gone. If you guys wanted to walk down a gum tree...
It's weird they're cleaning the street, but they didn't have any signs restricting parking. That's all.
No, they just took your car with it as it went down the thing.
Yes.
You know who
complimentary
I'm gonna,
car cleaning.
Let me tell you who I'm going to blame for Ben Affleck's flaws in his career.
Let me hear this. Ben Affleck?
Oh, well, no, what's your guess? No, not well,
Ben
Affleck.
Affleck.
No, no. I think that guy works hard. And
he likes, but he also drinks hard and plays hard. So
maybe
those
drinks
affect.
Hard, maybe plays hard.
Oh,
maybe
my God, he's a human being.
That's right.
But
wouldn't
yes,
you?
I know.
Matt Damon is just too...
And I'm sure Matt Damon has as well, but
so
it's just that...
Green Zone? Whoa.
Green Zone's not terrible.
Ugh.
But,
so preachy.
Yes, it's very
it
preachy,
really
but
preachy.
It's not...
That's his flaw of like...
Green Grass Zone, right? It's also directed by Paul Greengrass,
dumb,
so it's not terrible.
Diversity joke. It wasn't even a joke. He actually meant it, honestly, in, was it Project Greenlight? They were arguing...
Yeah.
They were arguing... Basically, they were... green lighting a film with, I think it was all African-American cast.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a director there complaining that, like, everyone behind the camera was white. Everyone in front of the camera was black. And Damon was arguing that, like, diversity doesn't mean behind the camera. Like,
yeah.
It was such bullshit. Like... You can't have just a bunch of white dudes telling a black story. Like how the diversity casting goes through the whole.
And it's it is bullshit. But when I saw that, I was like, well, though I know you're a reality show, so we need to have the clip that everyone's going to get mad about. And mm-hmm. if you don't have a clip that everyone gets mad about, your reality show is going down the shitter. So it's like, this is one that's going to get infinite play and going to get people watching the show the next week.
Yeah, but
which
do you say
really
something
didn't.
Horribly racist?
Yeah.
To like,
but
even,
I guess.
Even that has not affected him the way that Ben Affleck's
okay,
behavior
here's
has
the,
affected
here's the
him.
Problem with Ben Affleck.
Here's the problem with Ben Affleck. Reindeer Games.
Around that same time, I'll tell you.
Okay.
I'll tell you what I think it really is.
Okay,
I think, and it ties back to something we had at the beginning of the show, and I'm really proud of myself for making this theme.
Yeah.
All right. So before we get started, good for me. And now here it is, Kevin Smith. This is what I think.
Okay.
I think that guy can't shake Kevin Smith off his fucking shoe. And I think Kevin Smith does a lot of talking about Ben Affleck. And so because Kevin Smith is kind of an immature guy and talks about, you know, knowing Ben Affleck, all this Ben Affleck kind of gets tied into that in a way that Matt Damon doesn't. So when Ben Affleck's out, like, partying with the different Jennifers and whatever, mm-hmm. you know, Kevin Smith goes on all these talk shows and brings up stories about Ben Affleck and does his stand-up specials where he's taking questions to the audience. Always tell stories about Ben Affleck. And so, yeah, he's kind of tied a little bit to that and can't get it off of him.
Mm.
Even something like Good Will Hunting is sort of connected to Kevin Smith. So even that's a bit tainted and you can't get it fucking off of him. And yeah, he can't stop being that kind of fratty boy in your head, that kind of, you know, ugh. And, and in a way that Matt Damon really has not, you know, been stuck with. You don't really consider, when you think Matt Damon, you don't think Kevin Smith, but Ben Affleck. Yeah,
I guess.
You know. Yeah.
What I want to know is why Ian hates Kevin Smith. I'm picking up a real.
I saw him like a month ago at the Whole Foods on Canby Street.
You saw Kevin Smith?
I did.
At the Whole Foods.
Tell us the story.
Yeah, please tell us more.
Stopping in.
Where's he wearing a long black
coat? He was
coat?
Wearing a large hockey vest,
which is what he wears now.
Yeah.
All the time.
And talking to someone.
See.
And I was pushing my cart. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, I kind of double taked over.
Yeah.
And was like, that guy looks a lot like Kevin. That's Kevin Smith.
Yeah.
And I look a lot like my sister. So I quickly kept walking because I every once in a while, when it comes to that kind of nerd subset of people,
yeah.
I will get mistaken for my sister.
Okay.
And I didn't want to be like, No.
Yeah. You have a hard time imitating her signature.
Yes.
Kevin Smith has interviewed Pia on stage and knows Pia. Yeah. And because they're also both from Jersey, when he heard that she was from Jersey, they started talking in a way that eventually Lucy Lawless went, can I be in this conversation too? Who was sitting next to her.
It was so funny. Yeah. But yeah, I didn't know what to say. He looks like he's lost a lot of weight.
Oh, really?
Yes, he was being praised in the Whole Foods frozen food section by someone you could see he was just taking in someone who was gushing over him. And I was just like, that's Kevin Smith. I got to keep walking.
And if you're dressing in that hockey jersey, which is your outfit.
It's like a uniform.
It's like if you're Woody Allen and you're walking down the street with a clarinet.
Right. It is a uniform.
It is a uniform.
Yeah.
If you're walking down with your clarinet, you know, then yes, you're asking to be talked to and we get it. And if you're wearing your hockey outfit, you're clearly looking to... And listen...
And a backwards baseball cap.
I liked Kevin Smith.
No, his hair was up and...
Kevin Smith too. I just think that he...
Sure.
Emotionally, as an artist... He stopped at a certain point, and that's a bit of a shame, and I find that a bit of a drag.
Okay.
But the other part that I think is a bit of a drag, and it's not like haters be hating, but it's like I see he's got such a fan base that's happy that he stopped at that level, and it keeps encouraging him at that level, and so I feel it's too bad because he'll never grow past that level because there's no reason to. Mm-hmm. So the guy that's on Comic Book Men, that I think is the guy he's going to be unless something happens. And that's good enough for everybody. So maybe that's fucking fine. But it's a drag because he may have been more than that, and now he's turning into a walrus movie.
Well, maybe you never know.
I don't like body horror, so I didn't really go for that.
I didn't see it either. But
I live with it.
Not true. You never know what like someone's personal expectations. Like maybe he's at the pinnacle of what he's always wanted to be.
Sorry to have to interrupt, but you know what's happening.
I'm guessing ambulance.
All right. What do you think the siren going by is, folks?
Ambulance.
All right.
Come on.
It did not drive by us at all. And so we will never, ever,
really know.
Ever know.
God damn it.
It was the fire truck from Emergency, the TV show Emergency.
Coming back.
Reused again for this show.
Johnny and Johnny Gage and...
Randolph Mantooth, the opposite of Randolph Baby Teeth.
That's true. And Kevin Tighe, who played... What character was his name? Roy. Roy and
DeSoto.
Johnny. Roy DeSoto and Johnny Gage just drove by.
Oh. In there. Is it coming back?
Man.
No.
I think that's got to be tough to be like the... center of a lot of people's expectations when you're just starting out.
Sure. Listen to the show. I've totally frozen in one character.
But like everybody never wants, developed. You know, everybody kind of, I guess like Bowie is the
opposite?
Icon that people, yeah.
The opposite
someone
of
that, who evolves and, or maybe Madonna. I don't even know. No, Bowie. Bowie was more kind of, had more range. But it's not like
Bowie Madonna's done that too. I mean, Madonna has made a career of being... But she's more of a trend chaser than I would think Bowie
she's
was.
She's made a career of being financially successful.
Yes.
Whereas Bowie...
That doesn't hurt.
Yeah. Whereas Bowie actually took risks and didn't make as much money, and people weren't as jazzed about certain parts of his career as they are about others.
Yeah.
He
followed an artistic instinct.
Yeah.
But he also was a bit of a trend chaser. So he just did it in a way that
I think he
made it... But he was someone who was
really interested.
He could synthesize trends into himself, you know, so that he could represent himself as something new. And everyone went, my God, this guy's doing, what's he doing? He's doing Kraut Rock. Oh, it's so original. He's doing what Can and Noé were already doing.
This is amazing. Way. I was trying to think of like a director who's been successful, but changing his genre quite often.
Okay.
And this is not a hip thing to say, but like someone like Ron Howard, you know, will do a pivot turn and will do a very different style of movie over and over and over again. And you go, oh, okay.
I wonder if it's a class.
Rob Reiner for a while also.
You can't do
like
Grand
that.
Theft Auto every time.
That's true.
What if it's a class thing? Because like Howard grew up in Hollywood and probably was around people who switched careers and tried different things, whereas
you think that's a class thing or just
well,
a
Kevin
cultural
Smith,
thing?
No, well, like, if you're raised in a certain, I guess, I don't know. I guess in my brain I'm equating it to, like, right now I'm really poor. And every once in a while, we get a lot of rich people at the place I work. And there's a lot of talk about, oh, you just have to, like, take the leap and try something new. And I'm just like, well, that trying bit, for me means like I either succeed or I'm homeless. Like, there's a big risk there that I have no safety net like this person, like, probably has. So, like, someone like Kevin Smith, I wonder, he came from outside of the system, and there was so much press of this, like, new person doing this amazing thing that's so outside the system and so new, or beating the system, or not even being really part of it, that, you know, maybe he feels like if he rocks the boat, he's going to fall out. Mm-hmm. Not, and he's, there's 99 people who have, like, had that one moment, and then you never hear from them again.
Yeah.
And if you're that one person who's managed to stick around, and you're not surrounded by other people who also have, like, managed to stick around, mm-hmm. you're just surrounded by maybe other people who have, like, been those 99 or still trying to grab onto your hockey jersey to stay somewhere close to fame or financial security, or
it could be that. I mean,
output.
Then when we talk about Ron Howard, we're not talking about someone who's an auteur who is creating films that are very personal and stuff like that. He's really just someone who, you know, transitioned in his career from actor to director, and then takes on jobs that are interesting to him.
Incredibly successful at it, though.
He's he's very successful at it.
In many different genres.
I'm not saying he's bad, but I'm just saying that he's not.
But he's done a few films that have been like, that's a Ron Howard movie? Seriously?
I think, what's that?
The last racing movie he did, I was like, I didn't realize.
Oh, the one about
with Liam Neeson. Not Liam Neeson. Liam Hemsworth.
No, Thor.
Thor. The other Hemsworth.
The other Hemsworth.
Yeah, the Thor.
Chris Hemsworth. Yeah. Yes.
I didn't realize that was a Ron Howard movie at all. It didn't have any of the, like, twinkly old people.
Yeah, it feels like he...
How many of his films have twinkly old people? One. Why would you say that about...
Sorry, I'm thinking of Spielberg.
It doesn't have a... It doesn't have a mom giving a blowjob to the dad and then crashing the car like all his movies do. Like, it doesn't, you know... That's Parenthood, right?
Yeah. That's also...
Garp, isn't it?
Has
Garp, that's different.
Someone gets something bit off though. in a Buick, I remember. Yeah.
He crashes a car into one that's parked in the driveway. That's different than the blowjob in Parenthood.
That is true. But I think what Ron Howard does is...
Or attempted
He researches the...
Which is my new album, there was everyone.
Because the guy loses his...
No, that's in Garp. But I'm talking about in Parenthood. I think it's an attempted BJ that the dad gets distracted.
That is absolutely correct. You are
too much hilarity.
I think what happens with Ron Howard is he researches the hell out of something and then actually has this really interesting depth to it. Like, it's Apollo 13, right? Am I getting that right?
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, something like that. Still holds up. Still, it's really good. Yeah. And like, say, the racing movie researches the hell out of it.
That's one of my favorite scenes, Apollo 13.
What is that?
When Ed Harris turns everyone, he's like, we're going to get him out of there. He gives a big speech, stuff like that. I want everyone to get working. And then everyone reaches in their pocket and pulls out their slide rules.
Yes.
And just starts, like, doing these calculations with them. And I say, oh, that's great. Because it's such a – it's like – it's just one of those moments where, like, something happens and, like, people start dialing, like, a rotary phone.
Yeah.
And it puts you into that moment of, oh, that's what it was like then.
Yeah, you really get that sensory.
The problem, people.
Here's my problem with Kevin Smith. I've realized what it is.
Okay.
I think he finds –
We can't get it off this topic.
No, because I think this one actually does kind of say what it is that I'm trying to say.
Let's change the name to Sneaky Smith.
Sure. I think what he does is he started off doing stuff about his own life.
Yeah.
And you know, slightly exaggerating it. And then he wanted to do kind of a titty comedy, 80s titty comedy. But
Which one's that?
That would be Mallrats.
Okay, I haven't
seen that. But he didn't, you know, want to do that. So he did his own thing, and it was neither fish nor fowl, and was like, whatever. But I think after he did that, he just found comfort in stereotype.
Okay.
So at the point right now, he's doing, you know, comic book guys or comic book men, the TV series.
But don't
you
think Chasing Amy is kind of a daring film? I mean, it's not totally successful, but it does kind of step out of that.
That's right. And I think that's the last thing that he did that had real innovation.
What about Dogma?
No.
That's kind of a kooky
movie. We can talk about that.
I haven't seen that in a second.
But I think what he's done.
You're arguing for the movies you haven't seen.
Right.
Yeah, but I just mean, like, it feels to me like these are kind of all different sort of films.
But he's found comfort in broad stereotype.
Okay.
To the point where, like, even his real life friends in comic book men, they're all that stereotype. Whatever they are, they're that stereotype. And that's what he plays. And in his movies with something like, you know, Cop Out, or what have you. It's all broad stereotype, and it's comfortable, and it's easy, and it's too easy, and that bothers me. And I think when you feed those stereotypes without showing interesting extra bits, now we're in trouble. And I think Seth Rogen, on the other hand, by watching the trailer for The Night Before, you'd think these are the stereotypes, but everyone's got extra backstory, and even the side characters have extra story, and that's what I think. But when you're talking about Dogma, I thought that was a real fuck up, because what he did was, he wasn't, to me, in that one, making a movie. He had all the characters come out and do just this classic fucking mistake, which is they'd all explain stuff to someone and just go, don't you understand? I'm the this and that, and I'm going to tell you everything, and I'm not going to show you shit.
Yeah, that's too bad.
Everyone's just saying shit. And also they're saying it like
funny sketches.
And that kind of, why don't you understand the simple thing?
Yeah.
You know, and then you have, but then every character does it. Like, if Chris Rock was the only one doing it, fantastic. Mm-hmm. If Alan Rickman was the only one doing it, fantastic. God works the best because she doesn't say a damn word. She's actually interesting. She's doing a handstand. You're like, oh, God's having a good time. God's fun. I like God. What's the deal with God over here? Yeah. That's a good character. But everyone's just a yappy you.
And what that kind of, to turn it back to near the beginning of the show, it just, what's interesting to say something about Whit Stillman is that it's the characterizations and that give you this meaning of the story. You know what I mean? It's not, the characters don't sit down and say, you know, I really am in love with this guy, but he's not paying attention to me. I really wish he would. If only he'd pay attention to me and not be in love with this old girlfriend.
You know what my problem is.
Yeah, it just seems like...
Vicky, we've known each other for how long? 20 years? Well, and as my sister-in-law.
Yeah, it just feels like those are things in the story that can come out eventually. You don't need to introduce every element of a character right away, you know?
Yeah.
To keep with the Whit Stillman thing, a film like Metropolitan, where you have this kind of guy show up out of nowhere into this culture, but this girl is strangely in love with him, and you don't quite understand why, but it's revealed through the film. It never says, oh, this is, you know, the reason she's in love with him is, but it...
When she was eight, she fell off a bicycle, and this gentleman came up,
So it slowly introduces
10 years earlier. Oh, fuck you movie with 10 years earlier.
Yeah, that's the thing. It doesn't do that. So it introduces stuff with people, even stuff people talking about her when she's not there to make you understand about her character, you know? And so it builds it up in a way that's realistic, not just her saying to the camera or to you or to a character, this is why I am...
It seems a basic filmmaking thing that you do not have your characters say everything. You want to have them at most say like 70% of the things and let the audience project the other 30. And Smith, to my last bit of bashing, has his characters say absolutely everything.
Yeah.
So you've got no room for you.
Yeah.
Well, and for Clerks, like he started with Clerks, which was basically, I have a camera and a convenience store.
Yeah.
How do I make a full-length movie? Like, there's nothing you can do other than have them talk. And now I think it's,
the characters come out of their conversation. Oh, they don't jerky guy next door doesn't say, everyone, I'm a jerk and I'm going to be really jerky in the film and do stupid things.
But I think at some point, you're so, handicapped by your budget in that first movie that, and then you get lauded as like, oh, this is almost like a new style of filmmaking. And there was a lot of hype around the dialogue and the conversations. And so if someone tells you like, oh, that's good. That thing you did, that's good. So you do that again. And then people are like, oh, it's like, it's that Kevin Smith dialogue type of stuff that like people talking like this and making jokes about pretzels and shit and anal sex and blah, blah, blah.
And Star Wars.
So you just keep doing it because the paychecks are coming and no one's stopping you. Mm-hmm. But then, you know, if, I don't know.
Like, I don't know, but
you never break your own habits farther.
You start.
You can get into some really bad habits.
Eventually, an artist has to make his interiors. And that's not to say it's a good film, but it's a break.
Yeah.
From what you were doing, and you need to have that moment where you're just like, fuck it. I'm just going to do something that's crazy, and I'm going to make Willow.
No,
I'm
just no, you know what? Willow is a good example of, what the fuck is that movie?
Yeah.
And, you know, that could have been a career killer. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely, that could have been a career killer. It's like, nope. And then you just move on and do the next thing. And luckily, he got enough money to do the next thing and was able to. But yeah, it was definitely a risk. You look at that movie and just go, I don't know who this caters to. Yeah. Maybe someone who likes Lord of the Rings bit, but who liked that then? It's not Star Wars, Mac.
I liked it. What was I, 11 when I saw that? That was for an 11-year-old girl who moved too much.
That was a movie. That's what it was made for. Yeah. Okay. Well, that's good to know.
It could be the opposite. It might not just be like complacency or fear of losing your financial security or whatever. Well, it could be like George Lucas, who's like had just some, interesting ideas. And then people around him saying, no, don't do it this way, do it that way. It'll be way more interesting. Who then got very successful and then was like, here is my other interesting idea. And no one can tell me no. No, I have no men around me. I can do it exactly the way I wanted to, which I thought was right in the first place.
Yeah.
I can call it a light sword and not a lightsaber. And it'll be about this little kid. And it'll be about the Senate and elections. And oh, everybody loves elections. And no one
wants to go,
please stop doing this.
I'm sorry, I couldn't hear you in my ranch. The Skywalker Ranch. I'm sorry. Who made the most successful movie of all time? Who was it? Sorry, was it this guy? No, your opinion is also very important.
Yes, it wasn't this guy. It was
me? So happy to see you. Love it. Who else loves it?
Yeah.
Who else is nuts about it?
There's nobody there to go. Just calm down, George.
It's like
let
poetry.
Let me put a little thing on it.
Yeah. If you don't change your shirt in 20 years, you're not going to change your mind as well. Yeah. I just see the guy. He looks the same. Yeah. It's the same plaid shirt.
Yeah.
Bless your heart. Yeah. You got to shake it up a little bit. He's going to be part of the new Indiana Jones movie. We'll see what happens with that.
He's doing the Buckaroo Banzai series.
He is?
That was the news, right? Kevin Smith bought the rights.
Yeah, Kevin Smith is going to be working on the
Buckaroo Banzai series. Why do you love Buckaroo Banzai so much? I just want to ask you that.
I saw it when we moved somewhere. I can't remember where. It was Coquitlam. We lived on the river. And we just got a VHS player. We rented one from our previous house when and they closed.
Wait a second, I'm really confused now.
Okay, sorry, I have
to go back a little bit, because you rented it from your previous house. Doesn't make any sense.
We lived in Burnaby.
Yeah.
And there was this new thing called a video store. And you could rent a VHS player and movies, and that would keep the kids occupied.
Took 4 hours to choose the films.
So, and my parents got friendly with the owners, and the owners closed up shop while we still had their VHS. And the way I heard it was that they just said, we're not going to put it on the books because they sold their business to somebody else.
Okay.
Could be we just moved. I don't know. That happened a lot. We had a VHS player. We moved to this new place and I don't know. I just saw the box on the wall.
Yeah.
Had this cool like white box with this dude in a tie and a car and a thing and Buckaroo Banzai sounded cool.
It did sound cool.
And I rented it. And I
watched it. It's because Buckaroo Banzai Adventures in the...
Across the Eighth Dimension.
Across the Eighth Dimension.
And I watched it and watched it and watched it. And then I rented it. And I must have rented it like at least 30 times.
Wow.
Like just all summer. Just would go and, what do you want to watch? Can we rent this? No, please. Yes.
How old were you then, would you
like
say?
Between 11 and 13.
That's about the age to watch the same movie constantly.
That's a sweet spot. That and...
I can't do that myself, but
some Corey Feldman, Corey Haim movie where...
License to Drive?
No. He
Lost becomes, Boys?
No.
Oh, that's the only two that I can think of.
He inhabits an old dude's body.
Stand By Me.
And falls in love with this girl.
Is it a body switch movie?
Yeah.
It's not 18 again.
No. I can't remember what it's called, but I also rented that.
There was a Corey movie that was a body switch movie?
But not the Coreys. Oh. It's Corey Feldman switch bodies with this old dude.
Okay.
And it had, I can't remember her name. She was also in The Adventures of Natty Gann.
Okay.
She was in it as a love interest.
Shrug.
Anywho, those are the two movies I rented all summer. And when I went back to school, that video store went out of business, I think, because I wasn't renting Buckaroo Banzai week after week after week.
Yeah.
But there was just something like...
That seems weird to me that a video store went out of business. Those days, it was like license and print money.
Yeah. Adventures in Chapter 11.
Yeah. Or maybe they moved somewhere bigger.
Chapter 11 dimension.
I think it was just... It was set in New Jersey. And I'm from New Jersey, so that was something.
Mm-hmm.
It was this nerdy guy who was also a musician, a scientist. And that was just kind of like, my sister's super nerdy. My dad was a musician. There's all this stuff that was like really in my wheelhouse. And it was just like, you could do anything and be a bunch of different things. And I couldn't decide what the hell I wanted to be. And I liked the idea of like, I could be a brain surgeon, physicist, rock star, car driver, racer person who fights aliens. Yeah. Where do I get a degree in that?
Like, yeah.
It was just a fun, wacky movie. And it just sat well with my sense of humor at the time.
Do you, when you watch it now, do you recognize the flaws of the film?
It's whitewashed a lot.
Oh, I don't mean that stuff like that. I just mean in terms of story, in terms of.
I haven't seen it since I was maybe like 25, 20, or maybe my 30s.
Oh, really?
And now it's got all these very famous, like, those actors all went on to do some serious, really cool things.
Yeah, yeah. I just ask that because I watched it when around that time.
What's your flaws you're seeing?
It's been a while since I watched it too.
I'm not a huge fan. I enjoy watching it with Pia, but just Vicky's sister, because she likes it so much. Mm-hmm. But I do like sort of the beginning.
I like the idea.
I like sort of the ending, but then it gets, there's a bunch of middle that's just, I don't understand really.
Yeah.
And it's not for me, but what's it for you?
I feel the same way. I feel like, you know, it's something that you saw in the video store and you're like, whoa, I love this title. Like and I think it's more the way the movie kind of grew in my mind is what it would be. Like you look at the back of the package and you're like, this sounds like it's the greatest thing ever. And then you take it home and you watch it and you're just kind of like, wow, this is a little incoherent. And it didn't really.
And they start off with driving through a mountain, which is amazing.
Yeah.
I can't wait to see where this goes.
Oh, nowhere.
Nowhere as good as that.
They're on a bus. There's a long bus ride in this film.
They do release aliens.
They've got to find the aliens, and then it goes back to like War of the World.
It's not really.
And then they're going to fight whatever they did, the Legion of Evil or something.
What was it? Rock 101 did like those old-time radio shows on Sunday night, so I've heard all those like War of the World stuff.
And I don't even remember that part of the film, but I just remember,
they got there in the first place.
I saw it
They
once.
Actually did come through New Jersey, and the War of the World's Orson Welles thing was actually a real broadcast, but then the next day they tell everybody, no, it's only fake, we made it all up, and then there's all these like social security cards that were registered all on that same day, the next day.
Wow.
That actually sounds pretty good.
I wish the film did a better job. I just think it's like a great idea that just kind of lays there and doesn't really move.
Maybe
it was not enough budget for like the vision that they had for the film.
But at the very least, that was not like a movie you'd seen before.
Yeah.
No, well,
I got to give it that for.
I'm not going to give it nothing for that.
The watermelon.
What?
Yeah, what was the watermelon about?
Watermelon was great.
I don't know.
No, you're not hip. You don't get it. You don't know what we're laying down here. There's a watermelon there, yeah.
The aliens come into and I love the idea of this buckaroo.
We saw it 30 times a day.
I had this like dream in the back of my head of having enough money that I could have my own little like Elon Musk type science thing where all my friends hang out and we build things
with a watermelon.
Aliens come into the compound where they all stay, and the other idea of all your friends staying in the same house as you till you're old.
Sure, we all love the Beatles movie.
And yeah, like John Boy lives like that.
They're going through the compound find the aliens, and I think it's Jeff Goldblum and Clancy Brown?
Sounds about right.
Are going past the lab where there's a watermelon in a machine, and Jeff Goldblum is like, what's that? And Clancy Brown's like, I'll tell you later. And that's it. They just walk in.
Yeah.
And you're just like, I wonder what it is.
I'm not saying it's all bad.
If you read the novelization, they explain what it is. I can't remember right now.
Is it by Ellen Dean Foster, the novelization?
I don't.
He did them all. I know that because I had to...
I don't think it's a novelization. I think the book is by the person who wrote the actual movie. Yeah, and really gets into some stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
It just kind of hit everything, like all these things that I had been exposed to before: comics and science and music, and also car racing was really big in my family. Okay. And
I just fell flat for me. And I'm just so when you talk about it with such love, it's curious to me because. It just did not succeed.
It may be an age thing, too, because I think when you're a certain... I mean, that's such a sweet age
I saw it when I was 100.
That, which is, about now.
You can't be cynical when you watch that movie.
Yeah, you watch it...
If I saw it when I was, 17, I'd be like...
It's like we're talking with Superman or Superman 2 or whatever. You're of a certain age, you see it, and all the flaws are erased and all the things are filled in. Mm-hmm. It's like, I used to really like the Transformers TV show.
Okay.
And, I watch it now and just go, I cannot tell you what I could not, I can't justify in any way why I thought this was great, but I would rush home to watch this every day.
Wow.
I can't justify it. But you erase flaws as a kid and you just grab the things you like and then you love them so much because you connect with them in some way.
Yeah.
And then, someone goes, it's a big piece of shit, right? Like, what? No, life. No, don't tell me that.
And it might also have been that, it was one of the, being the youngest of my family, even my cousins, never the one to introduce the cool thing.
Yeah.
I was always the one exposed to the cool thing by my older cousins and siblings.
This was your turn to shine?
This was the first thing that I picked out that Pia was like, what's that?
Yeah.
And we still, quote things from the movie to this day. So maybe it was a bit of like, I found a thing. Look at the thing I found.
I'm not, I don't want to belittle it. I'm not doing that. I'm just curious because, like I say, for me, it didn't work and I wanted it to work. I really did want it to work. And,
and the
I
rotating just didn't bed think thing.
It
made it.
That do not. Come on.
Yeah.
I watched
War of the Short Form.
War of
the Short Form.
An ending so good they used it for Steve Zissou.
Pia was in that there's this, the president's in this rotating bed because he has a bad back, but Pia had a surgery where she was in one of those rotating beds.
Okay.
Just every fucking scene had something like, I know, what? What? Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Sure. It did say for Vicky only on the back.
Yes.
It was a special copy that the store went, she's going to rent this 30 times if we just make this completely right.
Exactly.
All right. Let me throw this out
Hope
before
Kevin
we start.
Hope doesn't wreck it. Hope he does it.
You can't wreck it.
What wrecks it? Oh, there's the new series?
Kevin TV series. He can't wreck it. You can't wreck the past.
You can't wreck the past.
Even if you're upset about Ghostbusters, and you shouldn't be upset about Ghostbusters. Don't be idiots.
That's right. Like The Phantom Menace made Star Wars seem even better. Right?
Yeah, there you
Didn't make it seem terrible.
The past isn't changed by things in the present. It's
fine. Well, it kind of is, because like Phantom Menace made Obi-Wan Kenobi look like an asshole.
Yeah, but who cares? You just watch the other ones.
I don't.
You're fine. You watch Star Wars. It's fine. Star Wars is still Star Wars. Okay. Fuck it.
Just one question, guys, before I know you want to say something. But is there plans to make an Obi-Wan Kenobi film?
Yes.
With the actor who played him in the whose
Ewan
name
McGregor?
Is Ewan McGregor.
Yes.
Have you signed off?
Really?
No, but he's been talking about that, and they've been talking about it, and yes.
Okay. I think he was actually disappointed in this. Like,
you can see he's disappointed when you watch the extra material. You can see his disappointment.
Even in the movie, occasionally he just turns to the camera and goes, "Ugh, I don't know."
Well, I remember seeing an interview with him being super excited about that final fight scene between him and what's his name?
Anakin.
I can't remember the actor's name.
Hayden Christensen. Yes.
And how much they put into it, almost as like, everything else sucked, guys, but you've got to come and see this fight scene we did.
But even that fight scene it sucks.
Yeah,
because it's all on fucking CGI, and like, you know, if a guy jumps out, he's going to land on something and there's no danger.
Big actor in that, in the prequels, signed on before seeing any kind of script because they're like, Star Wars,
so excited.
It's amazing.
The problem with that sequence, the CGI is not so great, but also the fact that they were excited to do that sequence and they put all this time into it.
Yeah.
And then when it's done, it looks so heavily choreographed and just two guys waving around sticks like they're.
And it might as well
some
be
sort of
CGI.
It's like a parade. It's like a parade thing they're doing. Like, where they're just.
Compared to the rest of the movie, though, like the other. All the movies, like not all the movies, but all the prequels, they're fully present and engaged in their work in that.
I guess. But once again, they have no idea where they are.
You look at Star Wars, and Star Wars, everywhere you are in Star Wars for the most part, you can physically feel things.
Yes.
Like you're walking through the sandy planet.
Yeah.
It's like sand. You feel it. Mm. You know, you're in the Millennium Falcon. Steel. You can feel it. It's probably cold in there.
Yeah.
You know, your Death Star. It's also very cold. You get it. You understand it. You're in a molten magma world and jumping from thing to thing.
Yeah.
Aren't you guys hot?
Yeah.
Isn't it a little hot? Yeah. And then at one point, like he gets too close.
Over
he gets too close to
it.
And sets him.
Stand over
he's on fire.
Yeah.
He gets set on fire. It's so hot, he gets set on fire. But you're jumping over this shit.
And they're never sweating.
Yeah.
But their hair should be like all sticky and wet, and they should be like shedding clothes. Their lightsabers should be slipping out of their hands because they're so sweaty. And
or they should be using some sort of force to like keep them protected. You could actually see them like protecting, but they can't show that. Like. Or didn't choose.
Yeah,
to
yeah the
show
force
that.
Can heal.
I don't know.
Okay, we know those films are bad, but I just was wondering because I would like to see Ewan McGregor do his Alec Guinness impersonation in a film that has something to it, which will be interesting.
This actually is my set. Oh, go ahead, you please, and then I'll thing.
He's done some recent movie where he plays both the devil and God in the desert.
Yeah, that sounds interesting. Well, it's not God, it's Jesus. It's it's about the 40 days in the desert. Yeah,
if that comes to town, let's go.
I was going to say, if you could, what I wanted to wrap up with was, if you could play producer and you could green light a project.
Okay.
You're not necessarily the director. I know Vicky is a director. But if you could green light, you can direct your own project. I don't fucking care. if you could green light a project that is a film you want to see that would probably not get made otherwise, what would this film be? Going with Dave.
Why me first? You have an idea.
I like this idea that you were so up on this you and McGregor Obi-Wan thing. Let me ask you that.
Okay.
Well, what would Obi-Wan do in this movie that you want to see with him in it? What would he do? Would he stay on Tatooine? Would it be all grounded? Whether we go into space? What's he up to?
Yeah. Well, I would like to see a film that takes place after the birth of Luke and Leia, that kind of ties why he's on the planet in a way that is sympathetic to him rather than antipathetic, the way it is in, is that the word? That's a word, right? Antipathetic to him in the other films, right? Where he looks like a jerk because he has all this information he withholds from Luke Skywalker in the first film. I don't know how they could do it, but okay, if I was going to greenlight a project or had something to do with the project, what I would love to see is the first two C.S. Lewis Out of the Silent Planet and Paralandra books done as films. I'd love to see those two science fiction books done. Admittedly, Paralandra is basically a long conversation done between two antagonists across Venus, a Venus that doesn't exist in reality. These books were written from a very imaginative, fantastical point of view. But I would love to see those two. The last book in the trilogy isn't great. And I guess maybe you'd have to do it because you have to do the trilogy, but I'd love to see the first two books, Out of the Silent Planet, where this character kind of finds himself kidnapped and put onto a spaceship and sent to Mars, where he discovers this civilization there. And the idea of the because C.S. Lewis was a Christian, these are Christian allegories that create this kind of idea of the Earth as the silent planet, as a planet that can't communicate with the rest of the universe because it is in the hold of the devil. And so this guy's on Mars and he discovers this whole world that he doesn't know about because he's on this isolated planet. And it kind of follows the same sort of storyline in Venus, which has a Adam and Eve story with this character who's come as sort of the serpent and the other character who comes to stop him. And they have this long kind of battle of wits and it's, those books are great. The Paralandra is so great that I was working a graveyard shift when I was reading it, and I was mad when the person came to relieve me because I wanted to keep on reading this book.
Nice.
And I would love to see those books done well. That would
be
my
idea. Can you pick a director off the top of your head?
You would do a really good job with those. Let me think about it while someone else is talking.
Okay. Do you want to go next or do you want to go last?
I've always wanted to do like either Grapes of Wrath over again, but I think there's been a couple of movies about the Syrian refugee path that I think have kind of they're in my like list of things to watch that I think maybe are like responses to Grapes of Wrath or maybe inspired by Grapes of Wrath. Just seems very kind of present and something, because I was rereading that book and it's so beautiful. I'd like to do that. Like, it's a very visual book, and so when I was reading it I was just like, oh, this would make a beautiful miniseries or something. Or the original War of the Worlds, the one that's like set in like 1910 or something with like English farmers and then an alien mm-hmm. arrives.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also very filmic
with
book.
The capsules unscrewing.
Like donkeys and carts trying to get out of town, mm-hmm. make it to the train.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Some of those Wells, like When Worlds Collide as well, is an interesting Wells science fiction book. Mm. That would be another interesting take.
I just watched that a couple months ago.
Yeah.
The 50s version.
Sure.
Make a big bullet.
I'm still trying to think of
to save everybody.
I'm still trying to think of a director for the Paralandra.
Sure. It means you won't be paying it. Yeah, you.
What I'm hoping. I've been watching the Rogue One
trailers,
and also listening to a lot of Public Enemy. And there's the line of like, this is a rebellion, I rebel. Reminded me of, there's a song. Oh, what's it called? Black Steel in the Hour of Chaos, where there's a line in the song about like, I'm a rebel, so I rebel. And I'm hoping that somewhere, someone like Rogue One is like just that song set to Star Wars. It's basically someone gets conscripted and then they have a prison riot. And I'm just like, I'm seeing parts of the trailer and I'm like, oh, it'd be so great if this is actually just this Public Enemy song done in the Star Wars.
And
so
if you made that call and guessed it like ahead of time, fuck, she got it. Damn it. No one.
It'd be great. When it comes out fully, if I get a chance, I might take that song or maybe some other, because it has this weird, like, maybe I'm just listening to too much Public Enemy of, like, fight the power, and the power is the empire, and you gotta fight them. I would love to make, like, a trailer to one of the Public Enemy songs, but with Star Wars people. And
nice.
Okay, I thought of a director.
Okay, I'm going to say that
you do.
Is it Stiltman?
Thank you.
Is it the Daredevil villain Stiltman?
Yeah,
is it Stiltman, the Daredevil villain?
It's Wilt Rumpelstiltskin. Who I'd like to see.
Is it Milkman? Is it the Milkman Always Rings Twice?
Wilt the Stilt Chamberlain. I'd like to see a former basketball pro.
Who is your direct?
I would like, I think someone that would be good doing the first film would be, this is going to sound weird, but the guy who did the Sherlock Holmes movies and Man from U.N.C.L.E.
And
Snatch and
Madonna's.
Guy Ritchie?
Guy Ritchie, yeah.
Okay.
That guy.
Because I like the fact
that. What was that guy?
That rich guy. Someone has to be someone who's British because it starts in England. I like that he can do like good period stuff that feels old, like feels in its period, but also feels visceral. And even when he has like CGI and stuff like that, it still has a feeling of reality to it, you know? And I would like it to have that kind of roughness. I wouldn't want it to be like a smooth feeling of, you know, like super futuristic, but more based in earth and in dirt and reality.
Really, you know? Good at, you know, action and
mm-hmm. Like that, oh, that slow motion sequence in the second Sherlock Holmes film, I think is brilliant. Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. And I like Man from U.N.C.L.E. too. I thought he had lots of good sequences.
There,
That great sequence of the boat and the character eating his the food in the truck. Okay. Just stuff like that where, you know, he has a good sense of action, but also to give it a slight twist as well. Like,
he doesn't know what to do with women, but
He doesn't know what to do with women?
Yeah.
Well, you know, him or all screenwriters in Hollywood today don't know what to do with women. If you look at films from the 70s, women were portrayed in a way more interesting way than they are in films now. And you feel like that should be the opposite. You know, but you can watch lots of films from the 70s where women
were
sympathetic and
independent independent filmmakers who were.
Some cases, but also Hollywood film stuff. I mean, Robert Altman was a Hollywood filmmaker. It's just that films of that time were just different people were looking for something different. You know, you reach a certain point where there's this attempt to smooth everything out into some weird way that's not. And this doesn't work because that's not what people are, you know. We're not all the same. We're different and we should be different in films, you know.
Yeah, I think TV is kind of picked up. Like, for everything that people say now, I wish movies were more like this and that. And I think a lot of cable shows and whatever have picked up that torch and, like, you know, we don't have this anymore. How about this show? Oh, yeah, that's true. That is really fucking well done. How about this? You know, there's no roles for this.
I think
that's actually better than that.
I think it's a lot to do with money more than anything. More than with ideas or with what I think it's just money. Like, movies are so big so much money.
I'm gonna go different. I'm gonna go with something Vicky was saying earlier, which is time, where you were talking about like how much time it takes to put a movie together. And I think because a movie takes so long to do, you've got enough room for people to
smooth out
for everyone to stick their fucking thumb in and have an opinion, whereas a TV show has to be done every week, so you can get something like a Breaking Bad where it's like, look, good enough,
or Breaking Bad, something a relative failure like the second season of True Detective can still have great moments in it that are really interesting, like the shootout sequence or the rescue at the orgy, where I think I talked about this show before, but what I loved about that sequence is, well, the weirdness of it, but also just the weird music that's playing in it, but that gives it this totally different feel from anything I've ever seen. And, you know, it just works because that's what they did, you know, and it's kind of interesting.
Well, I think the amount of money spent on films is still way more than your average television show. Mm-hmm. I think True Detective season 2 probably suffered from its success.
I'm not
all these people who are like, oh, we've got to make this one good, and I'm a producer who has no creative brain, but I'm going to step in and make sure it's quote-unquote good.
Yeah, maybe so, but it still felt like there was enough freedom in it to have some rough weirdness, I think, you know, that worked.
Television is definitely, you're able to get away with, I guess, more, or there's so much competition that they are trying to find something new, actively trying to find like an interesting way of grabbing attention. But like a big, huge movie, like it's time and money, like for a huge movie where like they're spending over $100 million, you get this giant, it's like that much pressure and money and fear that you're going to not get your money back will drive people to kind of, I guess, baser instincts of, you know, I'm afraid this won't appeal to this large chunk of the audience, so I'm going to take out this part that might be offensive or this part that might,
but you doesn't know, she the, might be the first season of True Detective suffers from that too. The final episode is such a cop-out from the rest of this.
Yeah, but at least the sequence it's interesting.
That, yeah, it's, like, got,
it's interesting, but it feels like...
It wasn't what you expected.
Yeah, yeah. And it's not even what you expected. It's less than what you would expect.
But it brought up so many huge ideas that it was very difficult to stick the landing on something that's conceptual.
I know, but to do all that and then have it, you know, just some sort of backwards deliverance
Just on a technical thing, though, you know, with movies, you put them in front of many audiences and focus groups and you check them over and over again. Whereas a TV series, fuck, man, we got to get this done now and it's got to get out. Yeah. And so you get to have flaws and then you get to correct those flaws and then you get to make interesting TV out of that. And so you know, you could have, you know, Orange is the New Black, the movie, and be sort of interesting, but you'd never get the character
depth. You would
never
get the depth,
Yeah, or Breaking Bad would actually be an okay movie, but you wouldn't be able to get the sidebars and the interesting side characters and make it so rich.
Yeah, or you can't have the background.
Or even Game of Thrones, you couldn't do that in like two fucking hours.
No, because Game of Thrones, you need those long, boring stretches. So when when the show explodes, it really feels like, wow.
But for television, you also have... You're looking to expand characters to fill, you know, however many hours of television you have. Whereas in film, you've got to streamline, and streamlining often means stereotyping of like, what's the visual cue you can give for this one character who's got three lines that you just look at them and you know, oh, that's a 30-something mother, single mother who's harried and she's upset because you're not coming at the right time and she's want to go home, and you get that from that, and that's all you get.
The other interesting thing about television is that it's not a director's vision or a writer's vision necessarily, it's a producer's vision. So you have a Vince Gilligan or you have a Genji Cohen, is that? I can't remember the name of the... But who's doing Orange is the New Black or you know what I mean? So you have, they're the kind of overall, you know, even though there's a multitude of directors or several directors who are working, working, jumping episodes, but they're all kind of working in sequence.
They're working from a book.
And there's writers who are working from his overall, you know, his ethic, or not ethic, his aesthetic is what's making the show. And the same with Orange is the New Black. And another show that I think is interesting is Penny Dreadful, which I've just seen a little bit of. But what's interesting to me is that it has one writer who's written all the, and he's also the producer, and he's written all the episodes, which is interesting, right? You know, it's not something you see
that's
very
kind of
much.
The like J. Michael, what's his name?
Straczynski.
Yeah, from Babylon 5. He had a couple of extra writers.
West Wing as well. I think one season he did every episode.
Yeah, who's that? Sorry, Aaron Sorkin did every episode, which is an interesting...
There, but he got it all done.
But it's a lot of, it's really interesting too, right?
That
you're getting one person's vision. I mean, I think that even when that writer, producer steps out of the writing slot, say at Joss Whedon, they still have a heavy hand in the overall form of the show and the aesthetic of it. But that's interesting. Like, whereas a film, it seems that because it's so much of this auteurism, which I think is kind of a bankrupt idea, but it's so much attention paid to that, that you, I don't know, it just feels like it's, I can't even say.
We were watching. Go ahead, please.
It's like there's, it's such a, television or movies are such a collaborative process. But again, with all the money and the time constraints on a film, you really have to have one or two people who are saying this is what it needs to look like, and this is what the tone is. And and if you have too many people saying this is what it needs to look like, this is what the tone is, it's all gray. So when a movie really pops, it's hundreds and hundreds of people working on that film, but
it's that one vision.
They want, and it's easier to say like, oh, there's a Wes Anderson movie, when really it's not a Wes, like it's the cinematographer, it's a group of people he works around.
But it's his aesthetic making the choices that we're seeing on screen.
And over time, he's really honed that aesthetic to a certain
And someone
point.
Like, say, Alfred Hitchcock, who purposefully cut his film in camera, he would never shoot material that he didn't want to see in the film because he didn't want the studio coming in and having options to change his vision. Yeah. And there's an interesting story. Someone was telling me that when Karen Black did Family Plot, she was, you know, the sort of method actress, which wasn't really his cup of tea, but, you know, and she was just doing a pretty simple scene where she's looking through cupboards in a kitchen. And so she did it once, and Hitchcock's like, fine, good cut, let's carry on. She's like, Alfred, I think I can do this better. I think, you know, and so she did it, you know, four or five more times. Well, he didn't bother. He just ran the cameras without any film in it. He just let her have her fun. But he's just going to use the first gun anyway, you know, because just let her, you know, that's what she wanted. So, you know, but for him, he got what he wanted. And that's good enough. He doesn't want to give the studio choices of takes because he doesn't want his vision to be diluted by them.
Do you know what's weird is I was, and I will get to my movie real quick.
Yes, please.
Remember how we were going to wrap up the show a half hour ago. I was watching, like, is it the Russo brothers that did Civil War? Is that?
Yes.
Yeah. Yes. We were watching Dungeons & Dragons episode of Community, which, of course, is, you know, done by the Russo brothers.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they also had one there where they have a boat in the parking lot that they're kind of sailing and they do all this stuff. And we watched it and it was like, oh, hell yeah, this is the same people doing Civil War. You can just see them learning all this stuff and all the visuals. And it's like just all these tricks that then you then take and move it to that. And it's like, yeah, this is clearly the same folks with such an interesting, different dynamic. Okay, here is what my film would be, because eventually we've got to wrap this up because, you know, life. What I would like to see. We're coming up on it. We've done an hour and a half change.
Yeah, it's a turbo.
What is the, are we still recording by any means?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. You didn't, are you Alfred Hitchcocking us, you fucker? Is this what you're doing? Like, yeah, I got enough. Maybe. I'm just going to let this thing run.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Keep looking through the cupboards, Karen.
For more bits. Here's what I would like to see. Uh-huh. I would like to see, and I don't know who could do this, but I would like to see like a Boogie Nights type situation, but going through comedy, the comedy scene from the 70s to generally like now, to almost the YouTube type thing. I would like to see generally covering, you know, the comedy strike. I'd like to see them going through the 80s and that style of thing. I would like to see how humor was affected, like by like 9/11.
Yeah.
I would like to just see how things change. Not necessarily.
Once again, that would have to be like a vinyl, like the TV show Vinyl, looking at music in the 70s.
That could be. Maybe it would be a miniseries.
It'd be better as a miniseries than a movie, I think, because a movie would have a hard time covering that amount.
Right. Because normally when you get a stand up film, you're going to get something like Punchline, which is, you know, just the fact that they had lockers backstage. No. They have lockers backstage now. Why? Because the people who watched Punchline went, oh, they got lockers backstage. Built lockers. Never had lockers. No one's ever had lockers.
Yeah.
But yeah, I would like to see a thing about how humor changed.
Yeah.
How that style changed, you know, and there's so much stuff there with drugs and sex and all these kind of things, you know, that would be very interesting to see. I would like to see something, you know, I'd like to see
characters get hired to work in Las Vegas. And so you get a sense of what it was like to work there and work places like Caroline's or work the comedy store.
Yeah. And then you see,
or being on the road,
some of
road
these people then go on to do talk shows. And it's like, you would never have expected Jay Leno to host The Tonight Show.
No,
that seems ridiculous.
This guy living out of a car.
Yeah. This guy living out of his car.
Yeah.
You know, it's going to be the host of The Tonight Show and own a bunch of cars, you know, dozens to beyond that of cars.
And not be doing blue comedy to like strip shows stuff. Like,
yeah, start off in the strip clubs. You've got the sex. You're working with strippers. You're doing all this kind of stuff. And then and then how are things for women in comedy? How are things for minorities in comedy?
Yeah.
How are things then when the YouTube comes in and you watch every generation of comedian kind of get washed away and a new wave washes away them, the boom comes, this is going to be forever, nope, there it goes, okay, irony's dead, we're not doing comedy anymore, oh, we are, what, okay, and then wash that away, and then, oh, what, the internet, we know how that works, no, you don't, this person does, you got your Dane Cook style, I'm the king of the, nope, wash that away.
So, would it be a movie or a series?
I think Dave's saying it should be a TV series, but it might be,
series would be better.
Maybe.
I think a series where, like,
I think a three-hour movie, but you'd have to really jam it in.
I'm trying to remember a show where like every season was like a different era.
Yeah.
Not Mad Men, but kind of Mad Men.
I think you're thinking Quantum Leap.
Yeah.
I think you're thinking the new X-Men movie series.
But like one season was like the 50s. One season was the 70s.
And we followed the Leno type character or what have you through it to see what goes on.
I don't know. I don't think he's sympathetic enough. You'd need a character who's less successful to kind of be the...
You mean a guy who's living in his car at the very beginning who then becomes king of late night and then everyone hates because he fucks over the new guy?
Yeah.
Like, that's not the story.
I know it's an interesting story, but it's not a sympathetic character that... You know what I mean? Like, you need...
I think if you start him off in his car, I think you get sympathy.
You need the character who's there And you sort of, isn't super high or low, just kind of is there.
American Horror Story thing, where it's like the same actors, comedic actors.
But that would be good. That's like a good, that's a good one, yeah.
But in the comedy world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
Maybe. I like the idea of seeing someone through, and I'm trying to think of
it. Pitch it to Netflix. Let's go.
Sure thing.
Let's get out of here.
All right. We'll get out of here. Fine. Pitch anyone it. Wants to do, anyone wants to do that, check out Vicky Van's YouTube page. What is your YouTube page, actually? It's at Vicky Van.
Vicky.van01, I
think. Vicky.
If you look up either,
I always make it Canadian memorable, Vicky.
Kung Fu,
okay,
or no, is
yeah,
that
Canadian Kung Fu?
I don't think it's on my
or Kingsgate Mall.
The Kingsgate Mall tribute, I think, is the one that's on my main YouTube page right now.
Okay,
and then a bunch of like volunteer stuff I've done for comedy shows around town, and cooking shows and stuff like that. Yeah. I think Canadian Kung Fu is on your page.
Okay, well, we'll throw a couple of links up for your stuff.
Yes.
Where can people follow you on Twitter?
Shut Up Nerd is my Twitter handle.
Okay.
It's Vicky Van.
Yep. So at Shut Up Nerd, follow Vicky. She's funny
tweet,
and good people.
Every couple months. But then I go big. I like do like 80 tweets. Everyone loves that, right?
Yeah. That's what everyone wants their Twitter feed.
I'm live tweeting the sunrise.
Yes.
Here it comes.
Let's look what I have for breakfast.
My eyes hurt. Ow.
I haven't been on Twitter for a while, except for I've been doing a series of Revenant 2 jokes.
You and everyone else, except for Andy Kindler.
Been doing Revenant 2 jokes?
No, I'm just saying everyone else is kind of very sporadic on Twitter, but
yeah,
he seems to be there every day.
Yeah. Let's not forget 2 weeks ago when I had that big Twitter explosion, guys.
Yeah,
it did pretty well. We talked about
that last night for the sit-in.
Yeah, for, you mean 2 weeks ago?
2 weeks ago, yeah.
Oh.
We're recording this a long...
Okay.
Yeah. Come on.
Yeah, we didn't talk about any current events. Do we want to start that up?
No.
Yeah, and don't mention any elderly people. They might be dead by the time this happens.
Okay.
And that's if they are dead, I'm sorry for bringing that up.
Way to go.
Okay, Dave, I think you're wrapping
this
up.
You killed the Pope. I'm wrapping this up. Oh, sorry, everyone. Sorry. Okay, as I said at the beginning of the show, everybody.
It's rapping Dave, and he's here to wrap the show up. He don't take no nonsense. Here he comes, rapping time. Here he goes. Dave, take this rhyme. You didn't
fight
do
the
it.
Was, fight wow. the power that be.
That's called drop
fight the power.
Drop the mic.
Fight the power that be.
Hey, Rogue One.
Why am I doing this in a country voice? Fight the power that be. Yeah. Fight the power.
Wow. Our whiteness comes out no matter how hard we try. Everyone, we have a question and answer show coming up. We'd love for you to contribute because it only makes that show better.
Please don't ask, why did we do this show? That would hurt our feelings.
No, you can ask that question.
All right. It would not hurt our feelings.
It would not hurt our
Please
feelings.
Continue.
Please ask existential questions.
You can do that too. You can do that too. You can reach us at our Facebook page, which is Sneaky Dragon. You can reach us at our website, which is sneakydragon.com, where our email is attached, sneakyd@sneakydragon.com. You can follow us on Twitter at sneaky_dragon, and we have a Tumblr page, Sneaky Dragon.
Now, Dave, are you still looking for the best of your title cards, or is that done?
Hey, if you guys want to do that, that's great. I love what I've received, because what's really interesting to me is the choices people make, which are totally different than what I would do, or what I think are really great. And I just love the fact that, you know, part of the problem when you do title cards is basically I put them up on the website, I put them up on Facebook, and I get 3 likes. And I'm like, wow, why am I doing this? And then, you know, sometimes I'll put one up, and usually it's the comic book ones for whatever reason seem to people always like those ones. And I'll get maybe 8 likes. And I'm like, well, I'm cooking. Look at this, guys. And then when I'm getting the votes, it's really interesting because a few comic book covers have been chosen, but not very many. It's been all kinds of other weird things. Some that people never even said they liked. Like, I've had 2 choices for the Narcissus one, where it's us looking in the water and Sneaky Dragon's reflection looking back at us, which I didn't do very well because I didn't color him properly. But people have liked it. And it's interesting, you know, because that one just kind of went out into the ether without any response. So I thought, like, fail.
It's a nerve.
What's that?
It hits a nerve.
I guess.
In our society.
It's just weird. Like, so it's just stuff like that no one,
I like
you know.
The Casper one. And let me tell you why. It hits all the things that I liked at the moment I saw it.
Which is dead ghosts.
Ghosts and Shakespeare and t-shirts that I really want. Yeah.
Here's what I like.
Heavy hints over here.
You did the Narcissus one.
Yeah.
You didn't get enough attention and it really bothered you.
Yeah. Well, you know. Let's be honest.
Ironic.
part of the show is about attention. That's why we do it, I think. We're not doing it this
way. That's why you give out your address.
Well, you know, I'm a bit of a ham. I'm not going to deny it. It comes with its honest Dedrickness. So I believe I've given all the information that I need to give.
Except for where people find those title cards. If you go to our website, sneakydragon.com, art.
Click on art.
And then you're looking for
Sneaky Dragon title cards.
And you're looking for within what to what?
What we want is your choices from 151 to episode 200.
Understood.
So anywhere within that. That does not count the Kaisper.
Send a fax.
Send us facts. Well, people have to send lists of numbers. And then they have to go back and look at the list and go, which one is 150?
Yeah. Yeah. Please put it on microfiche and send
it. Yes, that's also very good.
Can you put on one of those websites where you can, you just click on the thing you like and it calculates it for you.
Okay.
Because people are
one of those websites.
I don't know. It's not
interested in what people like. I'm not tallying them. Anyway, send us your questions. And Vicky, thank you for coming on the show. And
excuse me.
You almost made the whole show.
You're welcome.
Oh, too bad. Ian, thank you for coming on the show as well.
Appreciate that. I would like to say to our listeners, if you know you know David's address, you can find it on our website. If you have any spare copies of Buckaroo Banzai in any form, especially Laserdisc, if you've got Laserdisc,
I
DVD.
I don't have a VHS player, but I have a Laserdisc player.
If you have it on VHS, any of those, please send your copies of Buckaroo Banzai to David, and he will forward them to Vicky at some point.
Okay. Yeah,
so please send us your copies. You know you've got them. You're not going to watch them.
You don't want
a Buckaroo Banzai. We'll take the comic books.
Sure. The novelization. If you've dressed up like Perfect Tommy and have photographic evidence,
send that to our website.
Please, guys, don't just show us the end of Steve Zissou. We know that's the same as the ending of Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. That's where they got it from. It was an homage.
Are you not familiar with that, David?
I saw the movie once when I was a teenager. Okay. What do you want from me, guys?
I need to get you a t-shirt that says that.
What?
I saw the movie once
when I was a teenager. What do you want from me, guys?
That's what I just said. That's an amazing t-shirt. So timely.
By the way, if you want that to be a t-shirt, by the way, we also sell t-shirts. Go to our website, sneakydragon.com.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Go to this t-shirts. That's our merch, our store. If you want a shirt that says, what's it specifically?
I saw the movie once when I was a teenager.
What do you want from me?
Come on, guys.
Come on, guys. We will make that shirt up for you as well in any size. Okay.
Well, everybody, thank you for listening. I think I've thanked everyone now. Thank me for being on the show.
Thanks.
Yay. Yay.
Goodbye, everyone.
Hipster. Cool.
What do you want from him?
Do you know why they did this?
Because
they weren't allowed to clap. It was too loud. Clapping was too loud, so they introduced snapping during their poetry readings.
Guys, I think the popcorn's almost done.
Jiffy pop.
Butter.
Oh, we left it in too long. It's burned.
Buses. Trying to get a little silence here. All right, let's hope we got something. Something good. All right, ready?
Get that pink eye all over.
Vicky's falling asleep.
Hi.
I'm sorry to the show. Okay, here we go.